Yeah, Film Vault. Welcome, everybody, to the Film Vault. That's Anderson. I'm Brian Bishop. We're your hosts. For today's topic on the Film Vault, top five juvenile delinquents. Juvenile delinquent characters in film. Not the actors themselves. Oh, did you go that way, Anderson? You had the actors themselves?
No, Brian, no.
One of my characters, the actor, was a juvenile delinquent.
I think most actors are juvenile delinquents at one point or another. Right?
That's a good point.
Yeah.
No, we're talking about the characters in films, of course, themselves. Top five juvenile delinquent characters.
Oh, shit.
What happened?
Ton of notes you got there.
Well, let's just look fashions.
I don't want to hear you. Oh, Jesus.
There's bigger print.
Hear this on the Film Vault this week. Brian Reed, full 2 pages.
Logan had to listen to me read 300 pages.
Poor bastard.
I know. Can you imagine how bad that was?
Son of a bitch. Listen, great, great topic this week. I'm very excited. I don't know about you, but I had a tough time this week. I was struggling all week long trying to pare down my juvies.
Great list.
My delinquents.
Credit where it's due. The listener named Jude Wells came up with the list, and he emailed it to us or Twittered or whatever he did, Facebooked, whatever it was. Send your ideas in to the Facebook or the Twitter or the whatever. You can be like Jude Wells and get your idea on the show there.
You can be like Jude Wells. Thank you, Jude. This is a great topic. I don't know how it's eluded us this far. Also, I'd like to say that this topic, really no rhyme, no reason, which is kind of the case with the Film Vault week in, week out. We don't tie it into a holiday that's occurring or a movie that's coming out.
In 2 weeks, we'll have top five mothers for Mother's Day.
Well, that's already established, right?
Okay, right.
We're already set for that. Right. Miss Movies has her way. Oh, my God. Every week, Miss Movie's like, we should do top five with me. Bad mothers.
Top five of my ideas.
I'm going to get some tweets from her.
I was going to say, why would you attack?
Miss Movies, love you. We're going to have you on soon, all right? But I'm not so sure about that. Mothers. She wants to do good mothers, too.
Grandmothers.
How boring is that?
Good mothers.
Tune in for the top five good moms on this week's Film Vault.
Top five conflict-free characters on the Film Vault this week.
When the Film Vault's firing on all cylinders and doing its job... We really uncover, unsheath some good films from the past and maybe even the present that don't really get their due, that are worth checking out, especially those that are readily available at a touch of a button or two via FuckFlix.
Click.
This week is going to be one of those weeks. Get your pen, get your paper ready. I got some good shit coming up. So also with the Flick Fashion strong too. It's gonna be a strong week. So if you're tuning in for the first time, good on you, because this is a good one. So
yes, there will feature at least one movie in my top five. I've never made it in a top five before, which is...
Well, it should be like that every week, Brian. I mean, really, honestly.
Well, I mean, what I say is movies that have not been mentioned or have been slotted in at any point. And then one of my Flick Fashions, one of the ones I liked the best, it will be also streaming.
Now, if you live out here in the Southern California area, you're well familiar with the sitting in traffic and daydreaming, which is what I want to do about 30% of my day. 30% of my day.
30% of your day or 30% of the time you spend in traffic?
Well, 100% of the time I sit in traffic. Okay. I'm sitting in traffic, okay. Brian. So
no,
30% of my day.
No, spend daydreaming.
And this just occurred to me the other day. All right. So you're known to be a connoisseur of the old Transformers, right? It's an ongoing joke here in the Film Vault. You love your transforming robots.
There's no punchline.
You would actually give Michael Bay some oral there to give you more of his transforming nightmare.
No. I'd not give him oral. I'd give him a reach around. I would not give him oral.
Brian, if that was supposed to be funny, that wasn't. He actually leaned in for that sniff, boys and girls. It occurred to me the other day, while sitting in traffic, staring at five Priuses. Five!
I think at that point, they're five Prii.
Five Prii in front of me. And I'm like, wait. It's a great little joke there for old Mr. Bay, if he was clever enough. Has there ever been a transforming Prii? Like
Has
a hipster?
There? Like a hipster transformer?
Maybe like a non-sexual, asexual,
sure.
Like a Prii, Prius that transforms into a robot with glasses.
Ooh.
And speaks like,
glasses,
sounds
thick,
like Logan.
Thick rims. Yeah.
Has there ever been?
Maybe suspenders, tucks in his shirt.
Because as you well know, I stopped watching after the Chihuahua started banging near the beginning of the second one.
That's right.
I mean, I wanted to stop watching 5 minutes into the first one, but I continued to watch hoping that something good would come out. And I
soon
realized after the banging Chihuahuas that that was not going
to
happen. So I've kind of fallen off the map.
Are you backing off number four?
No, I'm not.
You want to go see with me?
Will not.
You want to go see with me?
But has there been a transforming Prius?
God, like a snooty, holier-than-thou transformer.
That would be
like,
fucking awesome.
Like up on everything before it was hip.
Guys, can we stop fighting? I mean, you're not even doing it right. If you knew of earlier kung fu movies, which I'm sure you don't because you're not cool enough to watch them, but like Rashomon, they would never fight like that. And honestly, stop doing that. Plus, it's really bad for the environment, guys.
That'd be awesome. Would you have like a little ironic mustache, like kind of wispy?
Just the glasses is
just
enough.
Just the glasses,
me.
No suspenders, no bow tie.
Let's get to Flick Fashion, because that's going to be a strong one this week.
Flick Fashion is we're going to confess the flicks we've seen in the past week, hence the name Flick Fashions.
Thanks, Brett, for that.
For the new listeners.
Go.
Me first. Okay, I can go first if you want me to, or we can do it in a different order. So three films, as I'm wont to do. One good, one bad, and one classic.
I revisited
a classic.
I got to touch the thermometer.
Why?
Thermostat's hot. Man.
It's actually chilly. It's actually, don't fucking touch that thing.
Also, good news, bad news, good news. Good news, Penguins won.
Thank God.
Bad
Speaking
news.
Speaking of ice.
I was at a bar so that I could get here on time watching the game. That's the bad news. Because I would have liked to have watched that at home with Stanley on my lap.
But why is that bad?
Named after the Stanley Cup.
You had beer in your hand.
Good news. Had a couple pops.
Please don't.
Had a couple pops.
Well, take off your hoodie. Why are you
Suns turning, and
why,
pucks?
Why are you turning the heat down?
I'm watching the Penguins, reading about films in between whistles, and enjoying quite a good win.
Intermission. Film time.
Mm-hmm. Go.
Don't touch that.
I might be slurring my picks a little bit, but it's okay.
They're that strong.
They're that strong.
No, cold air makes my tumor grow. Don't do that.
What the doctor always says, like, you know, put ice on it. I'm putting ice on your tumor.
All right, we'll see how that works. Number one, I saw a good movie. Start off good, go bad, then start off a classic. Saw a good movie. Streaming documentary. You can stream it now. It was recommended to me by a couple people. I don't know if you've looked past this or not. I don't know if you've seen it.
I'll let you know as soon as you see the goddamn title.
The Other F Word.
Oh, it's so good.
The Other F Word. Good movie.
Yeah.
Liked it. 2011 documentary directed by Andrea Blaugrund. Blaugrund Nevins.
Not important.
That's the name of the director.
Okay.
Documentary about punk rockers who are maturing into fatherhood. There's aging punkers, and some of them, most of them still in the music biz, but they now have kids. And how do you reconcile the fact that you were an anti-establishment punk rocker with the fact that you now are
Don't
an authority
like
figure?
Punk rocker.
Well, you're an anti-establishment punker, and you now have dominion over a child. You are setting an example. You're a father figure.
A very good documentary, right up to the point where at the end, where they hit you with a bit of a left hook. You know, you don't see it coming. It's like, oh wow, I didn't know that was going to happen.
Are you talking about?
Don't careful.
I'm going to say it features a guy named Dwayne Peters, who I didn't know who he was, and I kept wondering why he was in the movie. I'm like, this guy's not really very famous, and because it features famous punk rockers like punk musicians.
First of all, that's it.
Such as Flea and Mark Hoppus of Blink 182, and
neither one
are Alex Zakis
punk rockers.
Everclear.
Stop saying that those are punk rockers.
Okay,
because they're not.
What would you call them?
Fringe, sellout, alternative bass, funky.
Do they come from the
Mark Hoppus
the
is a great
scene?
Guy, but for them to say just because they have a lot of beats per minute doesn't make them punk rockers. They're whiny bitches.
I think it's more because they have a lot of tattoos.
They're whiny little bitches, all right?
Tattoos.
They're not actual punk rockers. One of the biggest missed opportunities in this movie is the singer for Adolescence, which is a punk rock band that, not, you know, the hipster in me wants to tell you you've probably never heard of them before this movie. One of the greatest songs ever made was called I Hate Children, which I used to listen to at full volume in my room before I could even drive. And it's a really good little punk rock song called I Hate Children. All right, he is a whiny little fat bitch now, the singer for the Adolescents,
okay.
Right? He's in the movie.
Oh, is he the guy with the neck tattoo, like the chin?
The super fat guy.
Okay.
Okay. He's got kids now. And they were playing a lot of punk rock music throughout this documentary. They should have played his song, I Hate Children, while they were watching him be a father with his kids.
In the little park and everything.
I feel like, I don't know how they
missed
that.
It was a missed opportunity?
How do they miss that?
Huh.
Would have been delightful.
So there was a guy named Dwayne Peters. I kept wondering why he was in the movie. And then it turned out that his story was sort of the most compelling of all. And I was like, oh, that's why he's in the movie. I'm wondering if that's the guy you're talking about.
He's the guy with the van that doesn't play guns.
Yeah.
Yeah, he puts on the fake seatbelt because he's still got punk rock.
That's right.
And he's got the son with a tragic past.
Yes.
And passing.
The movie is very L.A.-centric, which may just be because this is where a lot of the punk movement went down. I don't know.
L.A. Guns? Was it L.A. Guns?
There was a group called L.A. Guns. Yeah. Lots of life on the road. I wanted more dads with their kids. That's kind of a more compelling part of the story, but there was lots of life on the road.
A lot of Pennywise. Like, Pennywise is kind of the backbone of this movie. And if you're a punk rock fan, new or old, I think you'll find something to watch and grasp onto here. I really like this movie.
If you're a Pennywise fan, you're in fucking heaven because Jim Lindbergh of Pennywise is sort of the de facto
almost
main character.
Almost a narrator.
He's the main character for all intents and purposes.
Right.
Everyone else is sort of orbiting around him.
However, it ends at a time where a lot has happened since with many of the bands that are involved.
Is there an update needed to this?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, don't take it for like a history of punk rock, especially Southern California sure. punk rock, because a lot has happened since. But it's really interesting to watch these punk rock dads who are all anti-authority,
punk rockers.
And that's how they make a living, you know, come into adulthood, like Brian said,
and now trade on
try
that.
And be like parents. One of my favorite punk rock bands ever is TSOL, True Sounds of Liberty, Brian. And Jack Grisham, who is a singer, he's had many last names, but Jack Grisham is the one that he kind of sticks with. He is one of the funniest, greatest dudes ever. I cannot wait to watch the movie about his life. I might make it. I don't know. I still have a pitch and everything ready for that guy. I love him. And I got to sit backstage with him at one of his little shows at the Pomona Glasshouse, and he was explaining to me and my little sister, who's like 10 years younger than me, and she loves TSOL. So it was like one of those – I was the really cool big brother, and I got to like introduce her to Jack Grisham, who I knew because I had him booked on Loveline. Mm-hmm. And he was talking to both of us about how weird it is now that he has kids. And he's, you know, trying to talk to his 13-year-old daughter. This is like 8 years ago.
Sure.
About, you know, how it's not cool to be like, you know, trying to have cigarettes and guys and the boys in the house. And he's like, he wants to fight all of her boyfriends. And he's like, I'm the dad now. And it's so weird because I made an entire lifestyle
and
living out of hating dad figures. And now I am one. So that's what this whole movie is in a nutshell. And it's really interesting.
It is. If there's a weakness, it's maybe a little too in love with the music.
Well, that's Brian's weakness because he doesn't really like or appreciate punk rock. He just wants to listen to good old-fashioned rock and roll.
It's true.
Yeah.
If it's good old-fashioned rock and roll.
Imagine frat boys dancing and drinking Budweiser and whatever they're listening to, that's what Brian listens to.
Hopefully songs about Budweiser. That'd be ideal. Very good movie. Could trim some of the fat maybe, but streaming now. Check it out for yourself. You'll enjoy it. The Other F Word.
Okay.
Saw a movie that was bad. It's called Draft Day.
Why would you see it?
Try to see all the big releases for the old Corolla show there. My segment on the old Corolla show.
Okay, how about you not do it over here?
I feel like to warn people. This is a big movie. People are seeing that.
No
like,
one's
you know,
going to go see it. No, anyone who listens to the show knows better.
I disagree.
The people who listen to the show will not go see Draft Day.
No. Do you see the list of DVDs bought by our listeners? Mostly good. Some bad.
They buy a lot of ironic gifts for their friends.
We have to warn people. I'm warning you about Draft Day, directed by Ivan Reitman. Oh, where'd you go, Ivan Reitman? Kevin Costner, Jennifer Garner, Frank Langella, Dennis Leary, Ellen Burstyn, and Terry Crews. This movie's terrible.
It looks awful.
It's garbage. It's really bad.
It's made for that subculture that – so when I say subculture, I mean main culture.
Right.
Who don't really know anything about movies. Yeah. And they're like, hey, it's that guy from Dances with Wolves. I remember him. Let's go see it with the kids, honey.
I love football.
Football's good.
Ironically, this is aimed towards football fans. I think football fans are going to hate this movie. It's so inauthentic. It's so glossy and inauthentic. No one could possibly think this is how it actually works. It's insane. Like they don't have any insights into the way these work. A documentary about Draft Day would be fucking fascinating. I want to know how all the backroom deals work and all the technological stuff and the coverage. That would be interesting. This is terrible.
Ivan Reitman, most notable for probably what? Directing
Ghostbusters, Kindergarten Cop, Stripes. His last three movies were Junior, Evolution, and No Strings Attached. And then this.
He has a terrible son that makes awful movies that are overrated as well.
Oh, does he? I didn't know that.
Doesn't he?
Here's the thing, man. The blueprint.
Wait, doesn't he? Of course.
Yeah, of course. Jason Reitman. I don't think he makes bad movies. I like Jason Reitman.
He makes awful movies.
Disagree.
Overrated, awful movies. Thank you for smoking.
Disagree.
Juno. Terrible.
Let's talk about something we can agree on, how bad this movie is. The blueprint, Anderson, is laid out for movies. If you want to make this movie about the inner workings of a sports franchise told through the eyes of the GM, the blueprint is laid out. There's a movie called Moneyball that took the same subject, dry and boring, and turned it into an interesting, fascinating movie that was Oscar-nominated.
Yeah, but that was made by skillful filmmakers.
It is, but they laid the blueprint out. They said, this is how it's done. Copy of this and make hits out of it. And they willfully ignored it.
You can't just like easily make a copy of a great thing.
Hollywood tries all the time.
Right, and this is an example of a failure.
I'm saying they didn't try. Anyway, bad movie.
Why wouldn't they try, though, Brian?
It's obvious. They didn't.
They must have tried.
What I'm saying is they didn't try to emulate the good parts of Moneyball. This is just...
Is it based on reality? I know nothing. Actually, you know what? I'm very happy about knowing nothing about this movie. I don't want to hear anymore.
Actually,
I don't want to hear anymore.
Very, very, very vague. The Browns are bad like they always are. But the ironic part is...
Is it set in like modern day?
Oh, yeah. Set today. The funny thing is... They give the Seattle Seahawks the number one pick. That's sort of part of the plot of the movie is the Seahawks have the number one pick and then want to deal it away. Mm-hmm. But the Seahawks just won the Super Bowl, which means they would never have the number one pick. So they kind of got caught. Like clearly in the writing phase of this, the Seahawks were bad. And
but the Seahawks have been good for the last 5-6 years. So whoever is writing this maybe knows nothing about football. They don't even like open a paper.
This could have been a very, very old script too. This script might have sat around for years.
They can't juggle the teams.
They really can't.
Wow.
It's amazing. Why couldn't they just replace the Seahawks with the Rams?
Tell me this. I've gotten a few emails over at AndersonCowan.com recently about the next flick fashion, and people are clamoring. They want, and I say this when I say a few, good handful, like a dozen people have said, emailed me, say, please do a flick fashion of a bad movie.
Oh, really? Well, great. That's great news.
Let's do a flick fashion. Not a flick fashion. I'm sorry. Sniff tracks. Let's do it of this movie when it comes out.
Draft day. Oh, man.
Or maybe we do Postman.
Postman? I
want to do The Postman.
Never seen The Postman.
It's like 3 hours of some of the most glorious bad filmmaking you'll ever see.
Has anyone had? Oh, I know Nick Cage is in that category, but who's had
Leave
more?
Him alone.
Who's had more range Leave between great and awful movies?
Nick Cage.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Nick Cage is all over the map. He's made some of the greatest ever and some of the worst ever. So. Okay.
Costner's in there in that conversation.
Costner, what are the greatest ever?
JFK.
No, not great.
No.
Ever. No. No.
Great movie.
It's a well-made movie. It's a good movie. It's when Oliver Stone was still making decent movies.
Dance with Wolves?
Fuck that movie. Screwed Goodfellas. I will never forgive it.
Yeah, but you can't hold it against Dance with Wolves.
I absolutely can, and I will continue to.
Okay, well, that seems odd.
That movie's ridiculous. Go back and watch it again. It does not hold up.
Really?
Fucking white dude running around with the Indian.
No, I've seen it. I haven't seen it in years.
The one chick that he likes is the one, like, half Indian, half breed. It's racist, ridiculous, sentimental, sanctimonious. Fuck that movie.
The Untouchables actually isn't that good.
That's not a good movie.
That's not that good of a movie.
Brian De Palma at his worst.
I don't know. Okay. Shit. Maybe you're right.
He's not in many good movies.
Number three.
Wait. Let's see. Oh, Perfect what? World. Take everything back. Perfect World.
Damn it.
Kevin Costner.
So good.
Such a great movie. That's Clint Eastwood's.
Oh, Bull Durham's pretty good, too.
That's not bad. Yeah. Okay. Next
Field
week,
dreams,
top five.
Field of Dreams.
Top five Kevin Costner movies.
Goddamn. Number three for me. Third film I saw. It was a classic. I had a cool opportunity, Anderson, to go to the... Oh, I forgot to look up what it stood for. The TCL Movie Film Festival that was held at the TCM Turner Classic Movies Chinese Theater, formerly the Man's Chinese Theater, the classic, legendary Chinese Theater. When was the last time you went to the Chinese Theater?
About a year ago.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's a wonderful experience. It's a palace.
Depends on which. If you go to, cause, all right,
the, well, there's the little
Everything Brian just
theater.
Said is true, but there's a bunch of like satellite theaters that are just run-of-the-mill theaters where they charge you $15-16 to see a goddamn movie, and like it's not that great.
No, there's a historic
Plus a
$10
for parking.
There's the historic classic
Plus
Chinese
Plus the seas
theater.
Of tourists
With
you gotta like wade through.
The handprints.
Yeah.
You gotta do the Chinese.
Yeah, if you're coming out here to visit, you gotta go, you know, wander in front of that and see a C-3PO's handprints and right? He's in there.
I guess he has an RCD's little footprints or whatever they are. Yes. Anyway, they had a film festival last week, and I went to see they had all sorts of films, they had all sorts of classics, and I chose one off the list. Blazing Saddles. I know you're not a huge Blazing Saddles fan, Anderson.
I'm just not a Mel Brooks fan.
Mel Brooks was there again, throwing in the movie. It was awesome.
They brought his urn?
The man's alive.
He's still alive.
Man's alive.
I'm kidding.
Mel Brooks was there, the director.
I did a bunch of...
What?
I don't want to say it because it's kind of drugs, but there was a lot of... I was at a party at his apartment where there was a bunch of drugs present.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you bring them?
Because he had this immaculate apartment created for him. Overlooking the Santa Monica Bay out here, and I had some friends of friends who invited me over there, and it was a very small little – there was like six people there.
How long ago was
and
this?
And he made it – he created it and had it – Mel Brooks now I'm talking about made this for his wife who tragically died, and he can never go back in there. So he just rents it out now for ridiculous sums of money. $25,000 a month is what they were paying like 8 years ago.
It was like beachfront Santa Monica?
It's like a high rise overlooking the Santa Monica Bay.
Yeah.
And I walked in all exposed pipe and like these giant like concrete walls that like could recess and you can move them. It was a crazy place. But and there was drugs, just white mounds of powder everywhere. And I'm thinking, this is Mel Brooks. He actually was hanging out in here.
Yeah.
And now there's like drugs.
Now there's drugs.
And the people that that were renting there that I was there with, gay dudes. So they were just doing poppers and doing blow and banging at Mel Brooks' place, a dead wife's apartment.
Were you the only straight guy?
I was one of the only straight people there.
Wow.
It was enjoyable. It was a fun night.
Blazing Saddles. So, yes, I had the opportunity to revisit this movie, which I love, but I had not seen in many, many years. It was number four in my top five funniest female performances. Madeline Kahn as the burlesque dancer. Goddamn, she was fantastic. Madeline Kahn did not get her due as a comedic actress in the 70s. She's just fucking fantastic. This movie is actually nominated for 3 Oscars, which is amazing because it is a vile movie, at least in terms of language. And the N-word is thrown around quite liberally.
Bandied about
quite liberally. And it'd be hard to remake this movie now. It'd be extremely hard. Also, my number two movie set in the 1800s. It's set in 1874. Yeah. Funny movie, though, man. Really, really funny. And I loved – this was a candidate for top five movies that break the fourth wall. I wonder if we made the listener top five. But at the end, it ends at the Chinese theater. That's why it was great to see it there, because remember the ending of the movie is actually at the Chinese theater.
And you're in there. You're at the theater watching
it.
That's cool.
That's pretty cool. You're watching the movie in the Chinese theater, which you're also doing.
It's pretty great at the moment, and then it's ruined by people sitting behind you going, oh,
that's us. He's sitting on my seat.
And they start to clap. Oh.
Oh, you would have hated it because there was clapping when every major character came on screen for the first time. But it was a film festival. Mm-hmm. It's a classic movie. Right. I mean,
they're celebrating the movie.
Yeah, it's not like Harry Potter. Anyway, right. Blazing Saddles. Go check it out if you haven't seen it.
Try and make this quick so I can get to the actual top five, which I'm very excited about this week. But I was assigned a film. Here goes flick fashion for me. I was assigned a film, Captain America, semicolon, Winter Soldier.
Winter.
Yeah. This movie is coming in at a bold 93%, I think.
Shock. It was 89%.
Might have slipped down to 89% now. This is a movie that is a sequel to the first Captain America, which I couldn't remember if I saw it or not after doing a little research. Realized I did see it when it came out in the theaters.
Not a good sign.
And I liked it. I did like it. And I watched a couple trailers and clips and whatnot. I'm like, oh, yeah, I liked that first one. It was pretty good. This one stars an aloof Scarlett Johansson. A lot of last-minute rescue.
You just feel a little detached.
A lot of last-minute rescue scenes with actual countdowns. You actually see the number, like the countdown, like 5, 4, 3.
It felt like a James Bond movie from the 70s.
About to be, like someone's about to pull the trigger, and then the good guys show up. Like, literally, like, they're at sea. Like, the pirates are at sea for at least hours, if not days. And then right as they're about to pull the trigger and kill some hostages, Captain America and his crew show up. Like,
thank goodness.
Absurd. The fight moves and devices that I've seen numerous times over the last decade. I know trusting one-eyed Sammy Jackson. I call him Sammy Jackson now because he's with the one eye.
It's like Sammy Davis.
Sammy Davis Jr.
Samus Jackson.
And I was really, really annoyed. First hour, I'm like, how is this movie so loved? Mm. How is it lauded? How do people like this movie? I was confused. And then, Brian, we meet the Swiss Transcendental Man. In the bunker. And I'm like, this movie's turning a corner. I love it.
Wait, who's the Swiss Transcendental Man in the bunker?
The Transcendental Man. He's like a Nazi scientist who's been, his body is no more, but his brain still is. Like Transcendental Man.
Oh, yeah.
Like the documentary, like the Transcendental Man, as well as Transcendence, which is coming out next week with Johnny Depp. And I'm like, here we go. Finally something interesting. And that ends abruptly.
He's gone in five.
It ends abruptly, and the rest of the movie is a collection of cringeworthy moments.
Yep.
There was every now and again something decent would happen, but then it would be immediately followed up with a really hackney, horrible joke that would make me cringe again. And not until like the last 45 minutes did I think that anything was actually interesting, and then even that was hard to watch. What is with this movie?
How do people love
this movie?
It sounds like you and I are on the same page, where I would put it in the good category, but slow down, folks. This is not a great movie.
And I can't get into without giving away plot points, which I will not, but this enemy that they're up against in this movie is not an enemy that I'm interested in.
I said the same thing. This movie
they're trying too much to be relevant, I think, and they're trying too much to be controversial or like of the time, where it's your movie's in a lot of trouble if somebody in your audience, me, is rooting for what they're up against at the end. I was actually rooting for, and that's rare. It's very rare, and I'm not a contrarian to the point where I'm rooting again, for the bad guy.
Sure.
In this movie, I really wanted the trigger to be pulled. I was very mad when it's like 5, 4, 3, 2, and I'm like, it might actually happen. They might have some balls, and the bad guy might win for a second. No, the bad guy, spoiler alert, loses, and Captain America wins. Captain America himself.
If I said that, you'd come unglued right now and you'd scream.
Everyone knows Captain America wins. That's what I was talking to my buddy who worked on this movie. And I'm like, the goddamn fight scenes, like, if you know, it's like watching a game, a sporting event, and you know the score.
Yeah, you've TiVo'd and watched it.
Oh, you know the score, but you're watching the TiVo.
Oh, I see.
It's like, I already know the score, but I'm going to watch the dance anyways. Sure. It's not nearly as exciting.
Agreed.
All these goddamn movies, if it's built upon fight scenes, you know who's going to win at the end of the fight scene. It's like you're watching people dance.
Yep.
Violently. For sometimes 5-10 minutes. Actually, there's a point where somebody's going to be rescued who may or may not be a bad guy. And you realize they're going to be rescued. And then you realize that Captain America is going to rescue that person. And then that person is going to fight them anyways because they're mindless.
Yep.
Right? I got up and went to the bathroom. I'm like, I don't even want to see that. I came back in. I walked in as,
they're still fighting.
As the fighting was occurring. Yep. I could not care any less. Shocked.
I'm a little bit. This is not that good of a movie. I'm really shocked.
I'm very surprised that people like this as much as they do. And the amount of destruction, structural damage, and God knows how, countless people. Same with Superman, the most recent Superman. How many lives were lost?
Oh, yeah, when the huge space station came down in Washington, D.C.
I got a theory.
I know, into the river, folks, but that flood fucking killed people.
9/11, worst tragedy this country's ever known.
Mm-hmm.
Happens in 2001, right? There's a moratorium on violence in movies. Actually, they recut Spider-Man at the time.
Now. They're making up for it.
We're making up for structural damage and buildings crashing down in a big way to the point of ridiculousness. It's like, come on. And the Russo brothers, nothing against them. They do a fine job on Community. But the last movie that they made together was Me, You, and Dupree.
Dupree?
I say Dupree because of Pascal Dupree, who was a penguin.
Uh-huh.
Pittsburgh Penguin. But yeah, a lot of shaky, counterbalance, I don't know where I am, but
yeah,
action.
If I didn't know the Rotten Tomatoes score of this movie going in, I would have guessed it would be around 55.
Very surprised. And the best thing about it was Scarlett Johansson. 60. She was actually good.
60, it's barely, it's fresh.
And if this movie did anything good, was it made me realize how much I missed watching Under the Skin. And for the first time ever since I've been writing about movies over the last few years on AndersonGowan.com, I actually went back and upgraded Under the Skin, which
nice.
Is a movie that I talked about last week. And I didn't realize it when I wrote that review, Under the Skin. I talked about it, discussed it on this here program last week. It's not a great movie, the Jonathan Glazer movie with Scarlett Johansson, but I miss it. And I think about it. It's one of those movies that sticks with you.
Good.
It's not a great movie, but so I went back and upgraded it from 2-star to 3.
Good.
Because it's worthy.
That's why I dislike the whole movie reviewing in general. That's why I dislike.
Well, most movies you got to let them
exactly.
Seep in for at least a week.
People, it started with newspapers. People would see a movie and review the movies coming out that week, and they saw
they write it the day of
the last
sometimes.
Few days,
yeah,
or that day, and it was like. And the thing is, a good movie, a great movie, sticks with you, digs in. Like some movies are great right away, and you're like, wow, that was a great movie. Half the great movies out there, they dig in. They get better with time. They marinate. You got to sit with a movie. I don't think I liked Fight Club that much the first time I saw
it.
Then I sat with it, and I was like, it's a fucking great movie.
A lot of people that listen to this program, I think that you'll find something to like. I know for sure you'll find something to like in Under the Skin. So
okay.
Check it out if you get a chance. See it on the big screen just because the score alone is fantastic.
Next movie.
However, it's just not – I don't give – directors that I love, that I know they're capable of so much, I don't give them a pass. I don't. I get really angry if they don't, deliver something that's palatable for...
You hold their feet to the flame.
At least close to the majority of people. He could make a movie that everyone would absolutely love and be blown away, but he's either afraid to, or he's just kind of a fuck you kind of guy. And he's like Jonathan Glazer, I'm talking about, who made Under the Skin. All right. I also saw a little movie that I've been waiting and waiting and waiting for by David Gordon Green called Joe, Brian. Been talking about Joe for a long time.
Yeah.
It was on my top five most anticipated movies last year for the fall. It got pushed. This is Nicolas Cage's Joe.
Okay.
I mean, not Joe. Mud. It's
okay.
called Joe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
it's called Joe. And it's like...
So it is his Joe. But
it is his Joe. Well, he is Joe. And it is Mud. It also stars Ty Sheridan,
okay.
who is also in Mud. You might also know Ty Sheridan from Tree of Life. He's only been in 3 movies. Can you imagine that?
He's Neckbone?
He's a kid. He's like 16 years old. No, not. He's the other kid that's not Neckbone.
Okay.
He's the main kid.
He's not
in Mud. In Mud. And he's been in 3 movies. He was in Terrence Malick's Tree of Life, and he was in Jeff Nichols' Mud, and now he's in Gordon Green's Joe. And I've been waiting, and I love that Nick Cage when he's firing on all cylinders, being Nick Cage,
sure.
when he's not hunting for treasure maps. He is fantastic.
Sure.
And he really, rides that scope of film where he can make a really, really bad sellout movie and a really great independent movie. Mm-hmm. Wild at Heart's one of my all-time favorites. Sailor. Anyways, all that said.
So where does this stand? What's the verdict?
He. Okay. This is one of those movies where they use a mix of actual actors and non-actors, much like Under the Skin, which mm-hmm. I talked about last week. And it's jarring at times when it makes good actors seem bad, because when you see someone on screen, that's not a professional actor and they're awkward and natural and aware of the camera, but still fill in that space with like something interesting. And then you see somebody who's like seamlessly just reading their lines. It's jarring. The juxtaposition there is just, it doesn't work. And there's a lot of that in this movie because he uses a whole David Gordon Green, uses a ton of non-actors in this movie, much like he did with his first one, George Washington, which is a good movie. You should check that out. It's interesting. It sticks with you. It's you got to put a lot of work into to watch it, but it's one of those movies. That's his first movie. He uses almost all non-actors there. He does the same thing here. If you remember me talking about Prince Avalanche last month, he shot this in the same area in Texas, except it's on the other side of the woods. So Prince Avalanche is like a lighthearted comedy with Emil Hirsch, and you get to see Emil Hirsch actually be good for the first time for me anyways. Nice. I'm not a big Emil Hirsch fan, but he was actually really good with Paul Rudd in this tiny little movie that he made. And
that's the one where it's like, really? Farts?
Yeah. That movie's really, it creeps up on you, and I really like it, and I stand by that. Now, they took the, he went and he pointed his camera at the other side of the woods, other side of the highway where it has not been burnt down, and he made it very, very dark, pulpy, noir film about a guy who is kind of down on his luck, and Nicolas Cage wants to be uncaged. He's an alcoholic and he's got a lot of violence in him, but he's trying to just make things work for him, and he tries to move forward, and he meets this kid in Ty Sheridan who's got an abusive alcoholic father. This kid is impossibly poor. Like, it's just, it doesn't add up. One of the big problems for me in the movie is the character that Ty Sheridan plays is like a 14-15 year old kid who has an alcoholic father to the point where he just smacks him from the beginning of the movie to the end.
Nice.
The dad pretty much found a, like, just a boarded up house, ripped off the wood, and moved his daughter, his son, and his wife into this abandoned house.
They're essentially squatting.
They're squatting, yeah. Ty Sheridan, his character, would be a horrible, horrible person, best case scenario, and he's like a stand-up guy.
Mm.
It just doesn't – that didn't add up for him.
Yeah, that doesn't really happen.
Based on a book, but still, you know, maybe the book makes a little more sense. Here's how poor the kid is. Like, he gets a wind-up alarm, and he's like all excited, like most people would be about getting on, like, a smartphone. You know
sure.
what I mean? That's it kind of, and it's set in modern day. And he gets, he's like, it's got like a montage of him showing like his mom, his wind up. It's sad, but it's just, I don't buy it. Tragedy felt like it was around the corner at every moment. The ending at the very, very end, without giving anything away, is just absurd, Brian. It's absurd. It's like, I don't want to give anything away, but it's like, why is no one calling an ambulance? Why are cops standing around going, yep, that's the end of the movie. That's how it ends.
Well, they know. They've read the script.
Ridic.
So it sounds not great.
But what he does is, and I'm talking about Green here as a director, is he makes authentic drama. Like, it's not dramatized drama. Like, it's in-your-face drama that you get. It sits with you. You have to sit there and endure it and watch it. He doesn't use a whole lot of music to make you feel that drama. It's like almost like Harmony Korine tried to do with Gummo. But this is even more realistic than that. You're actually sitting with it. You're sitting in the space with these actors and these characters where sometimes I don't really – like I said, I think that this Ty Sheridan character, the little kid, the juvenile delinquent, apropos, would be much worse in real life. However, you do kind of experience his world through his eyes in a very real way. So, you know, it's better than most movies, but once again, hold him to a higher standard. And Joe let me down a little bit. I don't see this one going wide at all.
Oh, Joe.
And Nicolas Cage never really gets let off the leash.
Never
to
gets
a point
uncaged.
Where I get to really enjoy him. However, Brian, the best thing about this movie, the thing I'm going to remember the most is, I don't know if you – have you been pulled over a lot, Brian?
No, a couple of times.
I've been pulled over by a lot of cops. A lot of, like, cops that, like, want to – you know, they're just, like, ticket Nazis.
They want to prove something.
They want to prove something. They see, like, especially when I was younger, they'd see, like, a younger kid drive and they'd assume I was doing something wrong.
They see the tattoos.
So much rage, Brian. And – there's a scene in this movie where Cage gets pulled over, and what he does to the cop that pulls him over and eventually pulls his gun on Cage's character, on Joe, what Joe does is so satisfying. I wanted to watch that scene. If I was watching it at home, I would have rewound it, watched a few more times.
All right.
Essentially what happens is the cop does not write him a ticket. He does not pull the trigger because Joe just slaps the shit out of him. He just walks up and goes, what are you going to do? Do it! I'm doing nothing! He was doing nothing wrong, but the cop just pulled him over. He might have been drinking and driving,
sure.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But Joe just runs from him, stops, gets out of the car, walks up to him as the cop has his gun pulled, and just starts slapping him silly. It's so satisfying. And the cop like loses his hat and goes and loses his gun. He's like, oh my God. It was so
What's
satisfying.
Happening?
It was fantastic.
Right. Third movie.
Finally, I saw a movie that it's rare that I go see screenings of movies because I cannot stand the people that write for movies for a living.
Sure.
They're horrible people. God, I almost rolled audio on some of the shit that said the movie.
Now you talked about people talking in the screenings before.
And the screening was running late, so I had to sit in a little hall with about eight other people, one of which this guy who obviously makes a living writing for USA Today or something about movies, and him talking about his masterpiece that he wrote at full volume so we could all hear. No, a masterpiece of a review and an interview of a movie that he was covering. He was on the set. He must have said that it's his masterpiece 9 or 10 times. I hated this fucker
so much. Isn't that for someone else to decide what's your masterpiece? Like, you can't really say it's my masterpiece.
Obviously. He was just proud of it, but he didn't know how to say it without saying it. It was awkward, and there was this one guy that was, like, lapping up everything he said. It was just a collect. I've said it again and again. I love movies, but I hate people who make them, and I think I hate the little fucks, you and I included, that talk about them even more. I hate them.
Self-loathing.
So it takes a lot for me to be excited enough to go to one of these screenings. But Cold in July is a movie that I was very, very excited about. I talked about it back when top five Sundance most anticipated movies. Mm-hmm. This is a movie that remember a few months ago when we did top five vampire movies, I did a review of one of the movies that was called Stakeland. Do you recall that?
Oh, the vampire. Yes, in Staking the Vampires.
Right. Yeah. Stakeland, which is a fantastic movie. It's the same guy that did Mulberry Street before that. Have you seen Stakeland yet, Logan?
No.
What's wrong with you? Come on. Did I give you the recommendation?
I don't even remember you talking about this movie.
I would like to stake him.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyways, it's his third movie. It's called Cold in July, and it stars. He's finally got a real cast here. He's got Michael C. Hall and Don Johnson, Sam Shepard. And it takes place in 1989, July, in Texas, right? Comes with the name July, Cold in July.
Yeah.
And the movie opens with a very realistic depiction of a pussy and his wife sleeping in their little bed in Texas, middle-class family, Michael C. Hall, and they hear an intruder, right? And
you say pussy, you mean like a wimp.
He's a wimpy.
I think you mean like a vagina. I'm like, why would you never say pussy?
She was there, too. I'm sorry for the crassness. But yeah, he's a wimpy guy. Okay. Pussy in the sense that in the same way that I'm a pussy, like, sure. You know, not comfortable around guns because he lives in Texas, so it's kind
of you wouldn't slap a cop.
I would not slap a cop as much as I would like to. God, that was satisfying. It was so satisfying.
Vicarious.
Watching Nick Cage slap the shit out of a rookie cop when he pulled him over. Oh God. Anyways, back to Cold in July. So Michael C. Hall, who you might know as Dexter, maybe 6 feet Under.
You would know him as Dexter.
He proves himself as an actor. He's going to have a nice career in films moving forward. I can tell you that. He's great in this. And he's especially by Texas standards, he's a pussy. Yeah, you know, he's not a gun-toting Texan the way that you might imagine Texans to be. And they hear an intruder, and his wife's like, I hear something. And he wakes up. He's all scared. He goes. He gets his gun. This is the very beginning of the movie. This is an entire setup, and I think that they tell you pretty much in everything you might hear about this movie. Which, by the way, mark it, dude. It comes out late May. It's worth watching if you like good, tense, well-made dramas. It comes out in about 6 weeks. And he ends up pulling the trigger by a mistake because he hears a clock go off. He gets nervous, pulls the trigger, and he kills the intruder, right? That's the very setup. That's the cold open of the movie.
Sure.
Before you even see the title.
Like Oscar Pistorius.
Now Sam Shepard comes into play, and he's the dead intruder's father, ex-con. Tough guy, right? He comes after Michael C. Hall, and he starts, like, stalking him, right? And now Michael C. Hall is going to the cops going, hey, the dad of this guy that I shot by a mistake in my house, I killed him dead, his dad is now following me and threatening my son. And it's one of those things kind of like Cape Fear,
yeah.
Where there's nothing the cops can do. That's just the setup, Brian. Mm-hmm. Then there's a whole new direction that I'm not going to get into, but it's tense throughout. It sags a little bit in the middle, a little bit of a tempo issue in the middle, but then it ramps back up. Don Johnson comes in from Houston. Don Johnson, I miss that fucker. He is fantastic in this movie. It's a great little movie, a fantastic 80s synth pop. I have not seen a movie set in the 80s so strikingly since probably, Oh, what was it? Donnie Darko, maybe. The last time that the 80s have been celebrated. No, Donnie Darko, okay. I think. The 80s are celebrated in this movie. There's a great synth pop score throughout this movie. It had me hook, line, and sinker throughout, except for that middle part where it sags a little bit, but then it comes back big. And I really like this Cold in July. I think it's really going to hit the spot, too, for people who are tired of the Captain America-type movies that are being released all summer long.
All right.
Cold in July, at least limited
release.
We'll have
to give us a reminder when it comes out.
Yeah, I hope that people are going to talk about it because it's such a well-acted movie, and it's this there's so many really good young filmmakers coming up that are going to be sticking around, and this guy's one of them.
Nice. Coming up next.
Cold in July.
Coming up next, the top five juvenile delinquents. Spring has sprung, Anderson.
Spring.
You know how I know? Huh. People are buying stuff for springtime on the old Amazon click-through on AndersonandBrian.com.
Like little, hummingbird feeders?
Close. Someone got Scott's weed and feed fertilizer, turf builder. Weed and feed. They weed and they feed the seed. The seed weed and feeds. You ever heard of that?
No.
It kills weeds, like, but it feeds your grass. It's weed and feed.
So you smoke weed and then you feed yourself.
No, your grass feeds munchies. And the weeds die.
Got it.
Time to go over the interesting and notable purchases. Someone's getting ready for spring. Got a grill basket. You know what grill basket is? You put the shit.
Stuff is small. Stuff is small. Take it out.
Fish is a good one because it's flaky. Flakes falls apart. You can just flip it over. Yeah, and cook out the grill basket.
You can do that in your fireplace inside. You don't even need a barbecue. You can do it in your house. I've done it.
Someone got a Nexus 7 from Google. The old tablet there. Someone got a Samsung Galaxy Note. What is this here? Five internal hard drives. I appreciate you guys stocking up
what
your
you
office.
What are you creating?
Five hard drives.
Smart.
What is this? I don't know if you could buy these, but I guess it makes sense. Dehydrated colored marshmallows for cereal. Like, we're going to make your own, Lucky Charms.
Are we really to the point where we're making our own cereal, guys?
Someone got,
I'm
going to
roll my own cigarette over here and make some Lucky Charms.
A Durex pleasure pack of condoms. And
why
someone got Trojan
make your own baby.
Non-lubricated condoms.
Ooh, they don't like their bitch.
I was going to say that. Or
feel
maybe
this.
They're so romantic, they make her wet enough.
Maybe they're going camping and they want to start a fire.
Okay. Oh, no. Yeah. Someone got the Metrex. This is my favorite flavor of a meal replacement bar, the chocolate chip cookie dough, the Metrex Big 100. I like that very much. Someone got some syringes. God knows what for. Cocktail parasols. What is this? A food dehydrator. We want to turn mangoes into dried mango snacks.
Suck out that fluid.
A ghetto blaster shaped speakers for your. That's kind of a racist, but ghetto blaster shaped speakers for Bluetooth. What is this here? A computer desk. A big desk for working at home. Back to back World War Champs. A koozie. Springtime. This says giant movie poster. I was like, why is that a giant movie poster?
It's a poster for Giant.
For the movie Giant.
Oh,
that's
so
right.
Good. That movie's so good.
Poster for Taxi Driver, a Samsonite spinning purple, luggage.
Have you seen Giant?
Hold on, almost done.
Have you seen Giant?
Five soccer foosballs, the game Battleship.
Soccer, football.
And a PlayStation
football. 4. P4, it's football.
PlayStation 4 console.
I thought I was going to be killed by a bunch of Brits last week when I'm like, hey, you guys probably like soccer, right? So anyways, before I could even get any further, TV football? Football? Soccer's a made-up word!
Wow.
Settle down,
okay.
Fox.
Easy.
Jesus.
What do people like in terms of movies?
Well, the movies are about since,
I think Logan probably gave you your sheet.
Since,
it's right there.
Movies that were bought. Black Dynamite, which I said, you know what? It's for what they set out to do. Good movie. It just wasn't made for me. Despicable Me 2, which I probably will never see. And The Company of Men was bought. Smart. Have you seen The Company of Men?
I don't like it.
It's so hilarious. Red Dragon. Oh, hard to watch, but awesome. The Ring was bought. 12 Years a Slave. Additionally, hard to watch movies. Aladdin, not so hard to watch, unless you hate Robin Williams. Cyrus was bought. You know what? Not enough people have seen Cyrus. Me included. Defending Your Life was bought. Never seen. Defending Your Life was bought. Dread was bought. Gravity was clicked through. Harry Potter double feature. Deathly Hallows. Okay. Part 1 and 2. It's really just one movie, but we split it in two so we could charge everyone two times the amount to get in and see the movie. Highlander director's cut was bought. Blu-ray. Jeff, who lives at home, still needs to be seen by me, was bought. Paranormal Activity, the marked ones. Not seen. Wow, a lot of movies I've not seen on here. Pink Floyd, The Wall, 25th Anniversary Deluxe Edition. Seen that, Paul? I've seen that shit.
Which one?
Pink Floyd, The Wall.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Why am I drawing a blank on the director's name right now?
Alan Parker.
God, thank you. The Hidden Fortress by Criterion Collection, as well as The Hobbit. The Hobbit. Desolation of Smaug.
Thank you, everybody, for clicking through, buying the movies, buying all the merch and all of the stuff you do. We appreciate it. And now, in just a moment, top five juvenile delinquents.
Brian.
What's up, dude?
Well, DraftKings are a sponsor this week, and I want to tell you about how you can make money by being part of a rotisserie league.
Okay, how do you do it?
But not just like any kind of league. It's not the kind of league that goes on and on and on and on. And if your team sucks, you're screwed. No.
Here's how you win money.
Day by day.
In the old days, everyone puts in $50, and at the end of the year, the winner of the league gets it, and halfway through the season, half the guys are out.
And yeah, like 90% of the people that are in that league, they just stop paying attention because their team sucks.
Yeah,
injuries.
When your opponent draws the team, you know, who's not even being managed,
right.
It's like, oh, there's an easy win for that guy.
Well, I love that, actually. I kind of like that.
When it happens to someone else,
dead horse. Yeah, but it sucks if you're that person.
Yeah.
Well, here, DraftKings, that doesn't happen. Because every single day is a new day. It's like
you're
being reborn
every day. You're in first place every day. Technically, when you start, you're tied for first. Yeah. And right now, you can play for free to win real cash. Enter TFE today at DraftKings.com and get free entry into another huge contest. They're awarding over 400 grand in cash prizes. 400 grand! Free spots are going quick. So enter TFE now at DraftKings.com. Hey, this is Bruce Campbell. You're listening to The Film Vault on AndersonandBrian.com. Yeah, welcome back. Thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. We appreciate it. Thanks also to the urethras. That's good. I like that. The urethras from Bay Area, Santa Clara, California. The album, Chicken and the Corn. The urethras...
the-urethras.bandcamp.com,
or if that's too much of a mouthful for you, andersonandbrian.com. We have links to the urethras. Thanks, you guys. Anderson, top five delinquent characters.
Let's get right to it. I've been chided by our producer for spending too much time on Flick Fashion. However, I had a couple good ones in there that I want to... Actually, one really good one that I want to talk
one
about.
One good one, one mixed one, and one bad one.
Jim Mickle.
No, I can't say that Captain America's bad. I think it's actually technically good movie. It's
a run-of-the-mill summer blockbuster. It's like what we've come to expect. We get it. You can do great action with CGI now. It's like, show me something interesting. Never cared about any of the characters. Not at all.
Not at all.
Not at all.
I did kind of appreciate the fish-out-of-water aspect in the first few minutes, but it never really went anywhere. It was just kind of like, all right.
That was just, they felt like they had to do that almost, just to bring everyone up to speed. Like, hey, he's from the past.
I would have liked it was a running thing. But anyway, let's forget about that and talk about the top five. Juvenile delinquents.
Jim,
film.
I don't know if I even said the name. Jim Mickle is the guy that directed Cold in July. Who
you did? I think because he talked about his last movies.
He's being called the new Chris.
Cold in July is the new Jason Reitman.
John Carpenter. Which I can see that. He's a finer filmmaker than John Carpenter for sure. Because Carpenter was a B movie guy, but Jim Mickle, he's gonna be a household name.
All right.
Guy's good.
What makes a good juvenile delinquent in your mind? What are the criteria for making
hilarious?
A list? So you have to be funny.
Well, for me, I had to laugh at least their actions or behavior. All right. Also.
Actually, for me, 4 out of 5 are funny.
Back in the day, Brian, when Wayne Gretzky was still playing hockey. And there'd be like fantasy leagues, right? I heard stories before my time, but I heard stories that when people were doing fantasy leagues, whoever got to pick first, it was unfair advantage because Gretzky would score so many points.
Sure.
So they split it. So it was like 1A and 1B. And Gretzky was only like, he was two separate players.
Oh, you had to take half of Gretzky's
half
stats?
Half of Gretzky's
stats.
Oh, that's
interesting.
Yeah. Much the same way, today there is one winner that is, as far as juvenile delinquents, just head and shoulders above the rest.
Okay.
It'd be like if we were doing top five most powerful black men in America.
Okay.
It's like Obama is like default. Of course, Obama's number one. So
I'll say Oprah.
It'd pretty much be like, you know, the top four because Obama's right there.
You think Jay-Z's more powerful than Obama?
I think he'd be in the top five, but
okay.
I don't think he's more powerful.
Okay.
Not today.
Okay.
Therefore.
Maybe in a couple of years.
Alex DeLarge is by default not going to be mentioned. Okay.
You can talk about half of them.
He is the number one juvenile delinquent. I'm talking about the 15-year-old Stanley Kubrick anti-hero. Could be called
no, anti-hero
controversial to even call him an anti-hero because he is a rapist, convicted rapist murderer.
But he's the hero of the story.
Because he talks to us and he calls himself our faithful narrator, therefore we...
But he also has the character arc. I mean, he's so the hero of the story.
He's so fantastic.
I disqualified him because he wasn't a juvenile.
He's 15 years old.
Maybe in the book, but he's an adult male.
No, he's supposed to be a kid in the movie. All right, he's supposed to be in high school. Remember, he's got a pain in the Gulliver. That's why he can't go to school.
How old was he, by the way? Malcolm.
I don't know. That's one of your little pet peeves where actors play younger than they actually are. It doesn't bother me.
Okay.
Anyway, so he will not be making a list, my list today, because he is just so number one.
Nor mine.
Okay, good. What?
No, not mine. I told you I was qualified because he was a fucking
quick
old
question.
Man.
You ever seen that movie?
Many times.
Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, a couple times.
When's the last time? You've seen it a couple times.
I have seen it a couple times. Mm-hmm. It's been,
how many droogs
at least 5 years.
How many droogs?
Three. Well, two or three? I'm pretty sure it's three.
I would like to strike him.
Is there three?
I would like to strike him.
Is there two
with
or three?
My microphone. This one right here.
Two or three?
There's four. There's four.
Wait, I mean, in addition to Alex. Because he beats him with the cane as they're walking
nice
by.
Nice save there, buddy.
He beats him with the cane as they're walking
There's
by.
There's four.
To establish his dominance, he beats them in slow motion with a cane.
Let's move on. We've already wasted enough time on cold in July. Let's move on.
Number five for me. You want to go first?
I'm going to go first.
Go first.
Actually, no. I got to go last.
Okay.
Because mine's strong.
Okay.
Plus, I'm going to chide you while
I'll start first. Why are you going to chide me?
Oh. The difference between Brian and I will be explored, examined with my number one.
Well, maybe number five will also examine the differences between us. Because I rewatched his scene because he has a very small scene in the movie. And they are kind of funny. He nails the slapstick, the physical comedy, the pratfalls. In a movie that's not funny at all, or not supposed to be funny, I'm talking a lot about the movie without naming it. But young Indiana Jones, played by River Phoenix in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, is a juvenile delinquent of the highest, It's 1989, directed by Steven Spielberg. It's almost a cameo. He's only in that first scene. And young Indy is a thief, technically, because he steals an artifact that's being rightfully dug up by a bunch of archaeologists.
You strike me, Brian. Is someone who didn't have a TV in their house till you turned like 15. That's really the kind of person you are.
Why? Why is that striking?
Young Indy is a very bad juvenile delinquent.
He's a bad
number
boy.
Five.
He's a bad man.
Number five for me.
He's a thief.
He steals stuff.
He steals from adults.
What did he steal?
He's disrespectful.
Brian, you're so goddamn wholesome. It's cute.
he's also an unsupervised child. He has a semi-absent father figure. His dad is more interested in his own archaeological findings than whatever he's up to. Mm-hmm. And when he gets brought home, like, remember the cops bring him home? They're like, sir, your son, blah, blah, blah. He's like, give it back to the nice man
Very
now,
good.
Indiana.
Real life.
Junior.
Here's a problem. Real life River Phoenix, way more of a juvenile delinquent.
You're probably right.
Than young Indy. Okay, number five for me. We're not going to spend any more time talking about young Indy.
It's a great scene with always falls into a pit of snakes. You sort of see why he hates the snakes. Mm-hmm. And then he picks up they get on top of a train that's being carrying a circus animals. The cart's carrying circus animals. Mm-hmm. And he falls and he encounters a lion. So what does he do? He grabs a bullwhip off the bullwhip. And that's where he becomes
that's where it all began.
That's where it all began. Yeah. And then he falls into a pit of snakes and he hates it. That's where it all began. Right. It's good stuff, man.
You know, real life, what's his name? What's his name?
Han Solo. Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford, thank you. Real life Harrison Ford. Hates spiders, doesn't mind snakes.
Really?
Exact opposite.
Interesting.
It's a true story.
Number five for you.
Number five for me.
Let's talk more about young Indiana Jones.
Just to keep my hipster cred, street cred here, and you know, it's worthy of mentioning that he is kind of the archetype of juvenile delinquents in cinema. I'm talking about Antoine in The 400 Blows, Brian. 1959's The 400 Blows, which translates literally from French into to raise hell. The 400 Blows doesn't really mean much to us Americans.
Right.
But 400 blows, you say that in French, it means to raise hell, which makes absolute sense because Antoine does just that. The actual American title of this, for translation purposes, because they're lacking thereof, was Wild Oats when it came out in the United States back in 1959, 1960. But I'm talking about François Truffaut's French New Wave cinema poster child.
What do you call
movie.
It? His masterpiece? This is my masterpiece.
It's like his. Unfortunately, yeah, for me, I've not seen his entire collection, but from the Truffaut films that I've seen and have been forced to see, yes, this is the one that stands out. It's the one that stands out for most people. It is the Citizen Kane of the French New Wave, much like Citizen Kane, with all of the lauded
praise
and accolades that surround it. It does not stand up. Yeah. However, on its own, without all that shit, a cresting above it, it does stand up. It's surprisingly good, a good little movie without all of that surrounding it. There's no way that it can ever deliver with all of the accolades that it might get. Otherwise, you know, it was jammed down my throat going to being a film student numerous times.
I somehow escaped this movie. You have to see it.
Somehow? You've lived the life of Brian Bishop,
that's right. There's a lot of transforming robot movies I have to see in before.
I would like you to see this movie. I'd like to hear a fresh perspective from somebody like you. I don't know how much you've heard about it leading up to. At the time, a movie like this exploring a youth's juvenile delinquency had not really been done. Francois Truffaut is notorious for being a film critic first and talking shit about a lot of the staunchy, stuffy, classical period movies that were being made at the time in France. And the filmmakers were getting a little bit tired of this snot-nosed kid writing poorly about their movies, and they said, "Why don't you try and do better?" And he made The Foreigner Blows, which
and he did.
Blew away, pun intended, a lot of the movies that were being made at the time. You watch it, and it is the story of a kid who is very relatable, to especially to today's standards. With he's misunderstood by his teachers, who just think he's acting out and an idiot, and his parents, who don't understand him at all. So he ends up stealing from his grandmother and running away and all that stuff. And there's some really great stuff with him being interviewed. You can find that stuff on YouTube by like parole officers and whatnot, and psychologists asking him why he did what he did. And it's very natural and free-flowing. It's not set up, which was the style back then. This was the beginning of not only the French New Wave, but also the golden era of cinema for Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And it that last moment where he goes down to the ocean, which is all he wants to do, and then he looks right at the camera and they do this optical zoom on him, that's kind of like the picture for French New Wave. So for it to live up to all that hype and what it represents, it's not going to do it. But everyone who consider themselves a movie lover should see this, and it's kind of one of the, like I said, one of the first times that a juvenile juvenile delinquent's voice is actually heard. That's the thing, is you get to actually hear his side of things and why he does things, and at times almost like a sociopath explaining that you know he stole from his grandma because why wouldn't I?
So does he narrate or does he talk to the camera?
A lot of talking to the camera, right to the very end where he completely breaks the fourth wall and looks right at the camera. Unfortunately, by the time that I saw this one, I've seen it 3 or 4 times probably, and I probably enjoyed it 2 of those times. Hmm. But you should see it at least once. I mean, might assign you.
Oh.
Might assign you.
See the Foreigner
but
Blows.
The Foreigner Blows.
All right. It's a classic.
Yeah, but anyone who says, oh, yeah, it's a great movie, either they're lying to you or they're old.
Okay.
Because
what are you?
I'm saying that it deserves to be on the list.
Are you old or are you lying to me? You say it's a great movie.
I'm an old liar.
Okay.
That's me, if anyone knows me.
That's
hey, Logie, you seen this Foreigner Blows?
I have, just recently, too.
Oh, perfect. Why don't you speak up when you can add? Tell me, what do you think?
I mean, you know, like you said, it doesn't stand up to today's standards, but it was a great movie. I mean, I really like – I'm studying world cinema right now, and as far as all the different genres of that entails, that's probably one of my favorite genres is French New Wave.
That you've been forced to watch? Okay.
Yeah.
Not enough transforming robots?
Brian?
Not enough. Not enough quick edits or long takes.
Yeah, CGI.
Antoine, yes.
Number 4 for me.
4 and a plus.
Okay, Anderson, you think that I'm too, what was the word? You're not innocent, but I'm so wholesome? All right, fine. Number 4.
He just stares at me with nothing. He stares at me. Number 4, and I look right at him, and he has nothing.
I got nothing.
His actual mouth open.
Number 4. Oliver Twist from Oliver. He doesn't say please when he asks for more porridge. He doesn't say please.
Are we going to get a little newsies in here before the night's over?
No, that's not my number 4. Number 4, ironically.
You're kidding?
No, I'm joking. Oliver Twist is not on my list.
Damn it, that reminds me. I had a joke set up and everything when I was explaining that Alex DeLarge was going to be stricken. I was gonna instead of Alex DeLarge, I was gonna say Harry, Hard on Harry, from Pump Up the Volume. I was gonna slip him in there.
You never saw Pump Up the Volume.
Oh.
Never saw it.
You might be watching a little double feature: Foreigner Blows, The Foreigner Blows, and Pump Up the Volume.
Oh dear!
You can see where it's come.
Number 4 is actually Hit Girl, played by Chloe Grace Moretz from Kick-Ass, directed by Matthew Vaughn. Anderson, she's a mass murderer.
Is that delinquency or is that?
That'll get you thrown in jail.
Felony.
That is thrown in jail. Delinquency. If you're, I took juvenile delinquent to mean child criminal or child miscreant.
Like, yeah, I mean, if you have like a, let's say there's like a 12-year-old kid that's so far advanced that he's actually killing prostitutes at a pretty good beat, right?
Right.
Every weekend he takes out a couple. Would you call him a juvenile delinquent?
I think under the law, as of the law, he is. But anyway, Hit Girl is a mass murderer. She also has a foul mouth. I don't think anyone could argue that.
She says cunt a few times.
Insanely, but much like my number five, this has never been on a top five list for me. Never put it on top five. Never put...
wow, daring.
Never put young Indiana Jones on a top five. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Oh, Christ.
It gets worse.
I mean, really? Brian? Okay,
no,
you're done with Hit Girl.
No, you know what?
No, you're done.
I feel more strongly in my top three.
Number four for me, Brian. This is strong, actually. You know what?
Wait, you have to give me Hit Girl. She's a juvenile delinquent.
Hit Girl's on my, she's all in my also rans. All right, dude.
Don't dismiss.
That first one was great.
Don't dismiss. Young Indy?
I love that first one. No, not Young Indy, Brian. First kick ass. My also rans could make actually a great top five on their own right. And actually, I almost thought about maybe pushing this and saying, hey, we should do this again in a few months where we can, you know, do the also like part two. But I realized I do that all the time and we never do it.
We never do it.
So I got a great top five also rans as well. But number four, I could have made a top five out of this list alone, Brian. All right, here we go. Recently, this last summer, a little spring break.
Oh, yeah, good call.
Spring break. I could have had Candy, played by Vanessa Hudgens, on there. I could have also had Britt, played by Ashley Benson. I could have had the director's wife, Rachel Corrine, on there playing Akati. They're all juvenile delinquents.
That's right, they're all juvenile delinquents.
Faith, played by Selena Gomez. She wouldn't have
maybe
made the
least delinquent of the bunch.
She wasn't. She bailed before they really became delinquents. But no, I'm not going to have that.
Well, she did end up in court in a bikini.
A number of characters from Harmony Korine's Gummo could have made the list. Particularly that kid that he crushes up glass, puts it in cat food, and then gets the dead cats who, after they eat the crushed glass, and sells them to the Chinese restaurant. He could have been on there.
You know who else I just thought of?
Not a big enough character.
Damn, I wish I put this on my list, but I forgot about him.
But there's a few. Also, Max, the kid Max in Gummo, who prostitutes out his mentally challenged sister.
That's right.
He pimps her out. He could have been on there, but he didn't make the list. I could have just had the kids from the kids, from kids.
That's right. They're all juvenile delinquents.
Particularly Tully. I don't know. Was Tully breaking laws? He was banging virgins and spreading his AIDS-ridden seed. But was he a juvenile delinquent?
He was taking advantage of drunk girls, so he was probably a sexual assaulter.
Casper, definitely.
Yeah.
As well as most of the kids and kids.
Casper raped a girl.
However, Brian, I'm staying on the same path, same thread.
Okay.
Because Larry Clark directed Kids.
He did.
Written by Harmony Korine, all right?
Okay.
So there's a tangential Harmony Korine world a little bit there. But I'm going with Larry Clark's Bully, 2001.
All right.
Where Nick Stahl plays the real-life Bobby Kent.
I've not seen Bully.
But! What?
Hey, my buddy Art just really liked that.
I've never made you watch Bully.
No! Not that I remember. How's that soda?
Brian, it's tough to watch. It's hard.
Well, then why would I want to watch it?
It's fantastic. Okay. That's why. It's great. It sticks with you forever, Brian. Okay. Oh, it's so good.
Larry Clark.
The real-life story of the dumb fuck kids from Florida who have a bully in their circle and they need to take care of business. Nick Stahl and Brad Renfro, rest in peace, are the two lead characters. And Brad Renfro, he's like a happy-go-lucky kid. He's kind of like lost in the world. He's got a friend, Nick Stahl, who kind of knows the way. He knows some chicks and he knows where to get drugs and whatnot. However, Nick Stahl, his character, played by, it's a real-life story, he's playing the part of Bobby Kent. Well, he's kind of an ass fuck to the point where, like, Renfro's character's having sex with his little girlfriend and Bobby Kent comes in and says, hey, it's my turn. He just takes a whip, like a belt, and just beats the fuck out of him over his head until he falls off of his girlfriend. And then Bobby Kent just jumps on, starts having his way. He's a juvenile delinquent.
I was going to say.
The whole entire premise of Bully is... all Bobby Kent's so-called air quote friends banded together and say, hey, what are we going to do about this cunt?
Yeah,
what are we
going to
do? We have to do something. Real life character, real life story, fascinating story, hard to watch because Larry Clark is an in your face, possibly smut peddling director.
Possibly exploitative.
For sure. I don't know where Larry Clark is these days. I haven't seen anything of his recently, but this is 2001, and this is definitely worth watching. I was yelling about this movie when it was streaming like a year ago or so ago. I saw this movie numerous times in theaters. I loved it. Bully.
All right.
So good. Chilling, Brian. But this is one of the worst juvenile delinquents you'll ever run into.
Okay. Number three for me. I feel more strongly about this. I know you do, too.
I could tell, because you couldn't wait for me to be done with Bobby Kent.
Well, let me check the audience.
What? How dare you?
Number three.
Tell me more about Young Indy.
Giuseppe and Pasquale, played by Ronaldo Smordoni and Franco Interlenghi.
This is embarrassing.
From Shushine, 1946. Wow. You assigned me to watch Shushine.
I did.
And I liked Shushine. And this is the story of, is directed by Vito.
I thought of Shushine. But are they really delinquents? Really?
They're in juvenile hall. They're being detained.
For what? Again?
They got mixed up in
the sale. They didn't do anything wrong, really.
They got mixed up in the sale of some stolen goods. Remember some stolen goods?
But it wasn't
even them. Their brothers up to no good?
It wasn't even them. They just got caught with the briefcase.
In the eyes of the law, they're guilty.
Oh, come on.
They're in the juvenile hall. It's a depiction of juvenile hall.
All right, but, you know, are they actual delinquents if they don't belong there?
They're in an Italian juvenile detention facility.
Let me ask you this. I don't want to split hairs here, but a guy, he's on murderer row, right?
Yep.
He's on death row. Is he a murderer if he's innocent?
He's a criminal. You know what though? If the category was top five criminals, I put on my list.
He didn't do anything wrong.
But it's part of that compelling story.
Okay.
And they engage in the life of
great
the juvenile
movie.
Delinquent.
Hey, Logs, will you look up and see if this is because I get a lot of shit from you guys from not talking about older movies enough, and I agree. I mean, it's kind of our blind spot. We don't talk about older movies as much as we maybe should.
I feel like I do.
Most of them suck. That's why. Most of them are not worthy. It's just old people with white fucks with jowls when it's the greatest movie I've ever seen.
Good impression.
But Shushine, great movie.
And I love seeing the kids essentially like do a little impression.
Not streaming.
Oh, fuck Flix.
I love seeing the kids like essentially doing impressions of adults, of gangsters pretty much. It was it's a fun movie. It's kind of unintentionally funny. I mean, the kids acting so serious is kind of amusing. But good movie. That's Shushine, and you can sign away for that.
Fantastic little movie there, Shushine. Yeah, I think a listener might have had me watch that a while ago. Mm-hmm. I remember where Shushine came from. Anyways.
Shushine.
Here we go. Number three for me. This one's streaming, boys and girls.
Good news.
If you have not seen Bad Boys, it is time.
I've not seen Bad Boys. The one with Martin Lawrence and Will Smith?
No, Brian.
Oh, the Sean Penn movie.
Not the one with Martin Lawrence, Brian. The Sean Penn movie,
okay,
Brian.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Christ almighty. Directed by Rick Rosenthal, who directed Halloween 2.
Okay.
Which was kind of an oddball Halloween because back to Mike Myers' Halloweens way back in the day. This one had nothing to do with the other Halloween 1, right. 3, 4. It was kind of like his own.
Oh, that's right. It was kind of out in the. It was a sequel that wasn't really a sequel.
Don't think Mike Myers was even a part of it. Anyways, Rick Rosenthal, director of Bad Boys, 1983's Bad Boys, also director of Halloween 2. And then a tons and tons of TV since, and really no movies worth speaking of. But. Bad Boys is a movie that's streaming on Fuckflix right now. It stars Sean Penn as a juvenile delinquent, to say the least. This is his first theatrical role since where everyone first saw him, which was Fast Times at Ridgemont High. He made quite the turn. He looks the exact same. He looks like Spicoli in this movie, but opens up with him, dealing with a rival. He's with his girlfriend, Ally Sheedy. It's her first film role, and he's dealing with some like neighborhood thugs who he doesn't like. And there's a drug deal that goes wrong, and he's involved with shooting people wildly in the streets of Chicago. And driving recklessly away from the crime scene and taking out an innocent bystander and winding up in juvenile hall. And it's essentially a prison movie from that point on. And he must make ranks. And I had this playing in the background while I was doing work for the last couple of days. I watched the whole thing with the exception of the last 15 minutes, which I'm looking forward to watching again tonight. But I've been having it on in the background. The wife's not been pleased because there's like boogers that are picked out of noses and
shoved
in food.
But you have seen it before.
I've seen it probably three or four times. This used to play all the time when I was a kid on HBO and Cinemax and the Z Channel when I was a kid. This is one of those, it was Escape from Alcatraz. I used to watch this one quite a bit. This was my juvenile delinquent Escape from Alcatraz. And really turned me on to Sean, the other side of Sean Penn at an early age. And it's definitely worthy of being on any list of juvenile delinquents.
I heard a theory that if this had come out, because this didn't come out the same year or really close to Fast Times.
It came out the year after, yes.
Yeah, so if this had come out first and Fast Times had come out second, we certainly would have thought differently about Sean Penn, at least at the time. Because he was Spicoli for many, many years. People didn't take him seriously as an actor.
Well, this movie really didn't get the, they don't make movies like this anymore. All right, I got some notes on this, actually. Here's some problems with it. I can tell you this firsthand because I just listened. I listened and watched it and pretty much listened to it recently over the last couple of days. The score is it's a well-done score by Conti. But what's his name? Conti. Music. Bill Conti.
Bill Conti. Oh, famous.
He did a lot of
composer, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. However, it's very dated. All right, so you listen to it. It sounds like it should be starring Billy Ocean. It's a bad score for the movie. This is a movie that, you know, they use the word gritty quite a bit. You hear gritty? This is a gritty movie.
About the movie.
Gritty. They don't – no, I'm beyond the score now. I'm talking about the actual movie. Sure. This movie is gritty. They don't make movies like this about teenagers anymore. All teenage movies are either like really fluffy or hilariously raunchy. Mm. You know what I mean? They don't make hardcore movies about teenagers. I'm hard pressed to think of one since Bully, really. They just don't make hardcore movies. And when I say hardcore, I'm not talking about sex. I'm talking about like hardcore, like situational violence and extreme life predicaments. Teenage movies are either.
They're very glossy now.
They either fuck pies, which is hilarious, or they or it's like fluffy and cutesy and pretty.
Superheroes.
Who else is in this? Alan Ruck, who you might know as Cam.
Of course.
Cameron. Cameron from Ferris Bueller's Day Off is also in this a little bit, and it's streaming right now. So check out that Bad Boys.
All right,
Sean Penn. And watching it again, I was pressed for. I was trying to figure out how to slim it down, and I was hoping that I watch Bad Boys, and it wouldn't serve its purpose from what I remember, and I'd be like, you know, also ran maybe at best.
Right.
It's still really super
holds
good.
Up.
And the one of the main prison guards in Shawshank, I'm terrible at names, and I'm sorry, I can't remember his name, but he is one of the main bad juvenile delinquents in this movie.
Oh,
what
wow.
the fuck's his name? God. I'll figure it out during the break.
All right. Coming up next.
He's fantastic.
The conclusion to top five juvenile delinquents.
Brad. There was a film that I talked about earlier. I'm going to call it a film because, it's a film.
Oh,
The Foreigner Blows, Brian. Francois Truffaut's The Foreigner Blows.
Raising Hell.
Finally mentioned Wild Oats on this program.
That's right.
Guess what? If you're a little interested and you heard me talk about
I'm
it, and you're like, hey, I'd like to see if it's bad or as good as Anderson says, you get in for free.
How?
It's streaming.
Where?
Hulu Plus.
Oh, Hulu Plus. Well, that's good news because they're a sponsor. Hulu Plus, everyone knows you can watch tons of TV shows, new and old.
It's win-win.
Classic movies, too, like The 400 Blows. And if anyone listening to this show wants to watch classic movies, it's a good place to go. Hulu
Honestly, guys, The 400 Blows. I would not watch this, if I had never seen it or heard of it and I found it. And I wouldn't be, coming on the show going, you must watch this movie. It's absolutely marvelous. I would not be doing that. But if there's a way for you to watch it for free or as a part of a service, absolutely check it out. Give it 10 minutes to see if it's going to capture you.
Absolutely.
Now we can say that for real.
It's $7.99 a month, just $7.99 a month. But if you sign up right now at HuluPlus.com/TFV, you get 2 weeks full access completely free. That's a whole extra week more with this special offer when you sign up at HuluPlus.com/TFV. That's HuluPlus.com/TFV.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, buddy.
How's Logan going to eat now that he's been fired? Seriously.
It's a real problem because he will have less money to buy food with.
But our producer, Logan, we fired him this week. But he's going to be able to use a promo code. Good for him because he can use a promo code TFV at NatureBox.
NatureBox.com. NatureBox, first of all, it's healthy, nutritious, delicious food.
And we're saying that from the heart because we actually tasted this stuff.
Delightful.
They sent us a box. We tasted. We sampled everything. And I can't say anything was not good. Everything was really, really good. In fact, people that I work with came and they ate it all up before I even had a chance to eat more.
Check them out now, naturebox.com, and try NatureBox now. You get 50% off your first box by going to naturebox.com/TFV. That's naturebox.com/TFV.
It's reasonably priced, and it's way better than the stuff you get from the vending machine. Do NatureBox. Keep it at your desk and lose weight while doing it.
Stay full. Stay strong. naturebox.com/TFV.
Brian, there's a lot of our listeners probably are trying to impress either a lady or a guy.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine so.
However, you know what? The key to the alternative sex's heart is the stomach.
Alternative sex?
Alternative sex, right?
I want a sex alternative to mine.
But, if you're trying to win somebody over, their stomach. What if you can't cook? Blue apron!
Hey, how was the chili last week?
It had kick.
Remember, I brought it in. Christy made the chili from Blue Apron.
Right.
Could not have been easier. They give you all the right measurements of all the spices, all the ingredients, all the meat. They give you just the right amount of everything. You just do the cooking. Anyone can do this. She's doing it. She's like, anyone can do this. This is very, very easy.
And if Christy can do it, anyone can. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's not fair because she's a great cook. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
No, but anyone can do it. Right now, you can visit blueapron.com to see what's on the menu this week. And listeners to our show get their first two meals free.
That's
delicious.
Free. That's free.
No cost.
Free food.
Just go to blueapron.com/TFV. Incredible meals at home with Blue Apron. That's blueapron.com/TFV. blueapron.com/TFV.
As I was saying.
We found out who it was. Clancy Brown is the main prison guard in Shawshank. He's a kid in this? Or like a teenager, basically?
Yeah, he's like 18, 19.
Interesting.
And he's such an asshole. You hate him so much.
He's a great asshole character. Actor.
You know what also? I researched hard. I looked hard for some good black juvenile delinquents. None. I couldn't find any good black juvenile delinquents.
There aren't too many. What about the kid from Role Models?
He was great, but I guess he was some more loudmouth.
Yeah,
he was obnoxious, rather than breaking laws.
Thanks, by the way.
I think because they were either just like during the racist times, like the 60s, 70s, and 80s, like, you know, black characters were either just like full out thugs without any kind of backstory, or they were afraid to make an actual in depth story about a black juvenile delinquent for fear of being called racist. So it's like the worst of both worlds.
All right, hold on to that thought so we can finish this music. Thanks to the urethras. Talk about AndersonandBrian.com, Santa Clara's own, the urethras. Thanks, guys. Number two for me. Oh, this was your number one movie. Was it a guilty pleasure? Because
it's hard for me to tell when I have no idea what you're talking about.
A movie directed by a man who you hate, yet the movie you love.
Oh, no, Stand By Me.
Teddy Duchamp. Is it Duchamp or Duchamp? Fuck it. Teddy from Stand By Me, played by Corey Feldman. He's the one with the dad who's insane, the dad who stormed the beaches of Normandy. He's a war hero, as we learn through Teddy and through a neighbor who's having a feud with over the treatment of his dog. And the neighbor goats him and saying, your dad's in a loony bin. He's a loony. He's cuckoo. He's like, don't you talk about my dad. And the dad apparently did horrible things to his ear, put like an iron to it and melted his ear or something like that. And the dad's either suffering from PTSD or maybe he's certifiably insane. Either way, his son's acting out as a result. And at one point threatens to rip his neighbor's head off and shit down his neck in a moment of rage.
So that makes him a juvenile delinquent?
He's the most juvenile delinquent of the whole bunch. He's the miscreant. He's the one.
Brian, your wholesomeness continues. Are you trying to impress someone's mom? Did your mom still listen to this?
I don't know. Ask her to email you.
Mrs. Bishop, your son's being a real cunt.
That's not very nice.
This episode in particular, he's not really giving us some good, hardcore juvenile delinquents.
Well,
this
is a good episode to explore differences between you and me as people. You like violent.
I like movies that explore real things.
Oh, really? The people you're talking about are real things? You think Ted Duchamp is less real?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
The kid?
My dad's a war veteran, and he took an iron to my head, so I threatened people to shit in their neck.
I promise that's happened.
Yeah, but it's not bad. Brian.
Teddy Duchamp from Stand By Me.
And Alex DeLarge didn't make your list.
He's a fucking adult.
He's not.
He's closer to 30 than he was to 18.
He's 15 years old.
Okay.
He's a 15-year-old child in this movie.
Played by a fucking grandfather.
All right, number two for me. This is where it gets real. This is where it gets good. Oh, okay.
It wasn't real before.
All right, heads up. Anderson's going to do a little reading, which he rarely does, but it's worth it.
Stop it.
1983 is when it actually got aired on British television, Brian. It's actually called a British television play, written by David Leland.
Does this count? Can we count this?
Directed by Alan Clark. It's absolutely Brian.
This is not the British television play vault.
Comes in at a scant 73 minutes.
Not the British television play vault.
Talking about a little movie that I've talked about on this program before. It's called Made in Britain, Brian.
That's right.
Made in Britain. Huh. Made in Britain, Brian. Starring Tim Roth.
Oh. Oh. A young Tim Roth.
A Nazi skinhead named Trevor. This he could easily be my number one, and I'm kind of being a fuckhead for putting him at number two because I want to screw with you. Actually, you know what? No, never mind. My number one is deserving. But number
okay. What is it?
He's more than worthy at a number two. He could easily be number one. Trevor is. It's all about the reform system or lack thereof in Britain in during this time in the early 80s. There was another movie also directed by Alan Clark called Scum, which also almost made the list. However, it's more about prison and a little bit older people. Yeah. Ray Winstone stars in Scum,
yeah,
which is right around the same time. Both movies, very, very worthy of watching if you like that gritty look at youth. Ray Winstone in Scum was a little bit older, though, so I'm not doing a twofer here. I'm just sticking with Made in Britain. I'm going to give you a quick little synopsis. I'm pulling this off of I know it's not official, but Wikipedia. A lot of fanboys like to watch movies, and they take notes as they watch the plot unfold. And here's what Trevor does. Trevor, in the very beginning, of Made in Britain, he's being tried in a court on charges of throwing a brick through a window of a Pakistani man, because he's a skinhead, right? After he's been charged with shoplifting, he's also been charged with shoplifting. Trevor is defiant when questioned by the judge. His social worker, a guy named Harry, has him sent to Hooper Street Residential Assessment Center, Brian, where he goes to apparently they're so light on the juvenile delinquency. And this is Tim Roth. Imagine Tim Roth, 17 years old, maybe shaved head, suspenders, shit kicking boots, like the combat boots. Yeah, he's
laced
a Nazi.
Up.
He's laced a laced up Nazi skinhead. There's no denying it. And still, the courts are like, oh, you're throwing bricks through Pakistani men's windows? Well, you should go to the assessment center where they'll try and hook you up with a job and like, set you straight. So Trevor says, okay. Tim Roth says.
It's satirizing the whole process.
What?
It's satirizing the whole process. Like the kids in court for like a real thing, but they're sort of like they're
the movie's not satirizing the process. The movie's like being realistic, but perhaps the process is satirizing like what the actual issue is. The next day, Trevor leaves the assessment center. He goes there, but then he leaves. He immediately breaks into a car, drives. The next day he has to stay overnight. Then he breaks into a car, steals the car, drives to the assessment center. He goes to the job center, and he buys some. He buys some evil stick, which is like I guess like paint stuff for huffing. Just for huffing on his way to the assessment center, and then he goes into the job center. He demands a job after breaking a bunch of shit. He just breaks a bunch of shit and goes, "Give me a job, give me a job." And then when he's asked to wait for a moment, he storms off, hurls a brick through the window, and cruises down the street. Like he pulls off his shirt, and he's like a car drives by, he kicks the car. And it's just nonstop mayhem. And just the worst kind of human being you can imagine. Yeah, it's all about the system trying to give him another chance because he's juvenile. Once they become adults at this time in England, it's like game over. But it's all about them trying to give him numerous chances. They even like his assessment center parole officer essentially says, maybe you would like a career in driving cars, and he lets him like enter his car into like some kind of mashup, like a car derby smashup, and he's loving it. He's finally happy for the first time, but then he crashes the car and he's just furious. It's seeing Tim Roth in this role is scary, hilarious, and worthy definitely of today's list.
All right.
Holy shit.
Number one for me.
Made in Britain.
I've not seen a British teleplay.
Brian, that's what they call them, all right?
Yeah. I understand. TV movie.
It's a cinema. How dare you? Made in Britain.
Number one for me.
73 minutes. Scant. Scant. 73
scant.
Minutes.
Scant. Again, through in no time. Can you stream this shit?
You used to be able to, I think. Not anymore.
Maybe it'll come back.
Made in Britain.
My number one is from 1976.
What?
It
Brian, is. Brian, getting out of your comfort zone.
I know. I don't know what to think. That's from a movie called The Bad News Bears. Now you might think.
Oh. You going Tanner or
you might think
Kelly Leak?
You might think it's Kelly Leak because he is a juvenile delinquent. He rides the motorcycle. He's the tough guy.
Uh-huh.
Oh, no. Tanner Boyle.
Tanner
Boyle.
Hey, high five. I love Tanner.
Tanner Boyle is directed by Michael Ritchie. And my God, Tanner Boyle is steals the show. He is, he's foul mouthed is a bit of an understatement.
I don't know if he can get through like 10 syllables without uttering the N word.
Do you think he swears every
about
10 or 12th word?
I'd say 10 syllables.
Okay. 10 syllables. There
now,
you go.
Not because of his racism, Brian, but just the way he looks, his attitude, the way that he is, I think my heaven might be just walking in the shoes of Tanner,
right,
for a lifetime. For eternity. Just cruising around as him.
He uses most, if not all, the curse words and most racial epithets available to him.
Right. Well, why wouldn't you?
I mean, they're all there, so use them. This is not a movie you could make today. The fact they made, literally, proven by the fact they made a milquetoast PG-13 sequel. This movie exists in that time, and it can't, like, it's only 2 years away from Blazing Saddles. That's the same era where you could make those kinds of movies. You can't make those today. But Tanner Boyle from
Bad
News Bears.
I mean, you can, it's just no one's going to finance it.
Yeah, so in other words, you couldn't make it because no one's going to be in that movie. You know, I mean, yes, you can make a little home movie in your backyard, yes, but you cannot make a Hollywood film. Tanner Boyle. Love that Tanner Boyle.
Tanner puts an exclamation mark on that on the end of that film.
Steals the show. He does.
Every scene he's in, he steals.
Yep.
Speaking of boogers.
That's right. It's kind of the lines you remember the most is Tanner.
Yeah, because that's the definition of stealing every single scene he's in. And, you know, it's heartbreaking. I've talked to a number of people all ages who know of Bad News Bears, but they don't know that there's two of them, and they've only seen the most recent
new
one. And it's just, I mean, that's really like a big picture problem with, you know, modern day film and audiences. And like that, if you could really give a snapshot of what infuriates me is like, you can remake a movie like that poorly, and a lot of people won't even know the original one exists. Like, it just buries it. And the first one is so much better. All of the stuff that you get away with in the first one that you can't nowadays, aside, the first one is just so much better.
It's crucial to the story, too. You can't – I mean, it's crucial to what the movie is.
And as I'm saying this and going on and on, it occurs to me that I never saw the second one. And I won't.
Oh, it's no good.
So I don't know.
It's no good.
I'm just going off of what I've heard. I have not seen the second
one. It's an example of what I hate about a lot of movies, which is stunt casting, but not real stunt casting. It's the kind of obvious stunt casting, which is people saw Bad Santa, I'm sure, and maybe Mr. Woodcock or whatever the fuck, you know, School for Scoundrels, all the terrible Billy Bob Thornton movies. Was he in all of those? Well, it's not Bad Santa's the point. And they're like, hey, here's a guy who curses at kids and kids curse back at him and there's a little person who's cursing at him. He'll be great for a remake of Bad News Bears. And it's like, I mean, he would not
but
be
Greg
great
Kinnear,
for it.
I love Greg Kinnear.
What are you talking about?
Isn't he in the...
He is, but he's almost a complete non-factor.
He's
it's the Billy Bob Thornton show.
Oh, okay.
It's terrible.
Speaking of which, Fargo. You excited about Fargo?
Oh, no. Don't make that makes you number
one. You excited
about
TV Fargo? No,
I have no interest.
I've actually heard pretty good things. I'm going to go watch it when I get home.
I bet it's going to be good.
I don't watch TV, so why would
I
watch
like,
that?
Keaton Peele's in it.
Oh, yeah?
They play FBI agents that bicker.
We're talking about Fargo, the TV show now. We've jumped over.
Right, number one for you.
Number one for me. And this is the one that makes me sad, Brian. Number one for me. You know what? I just dissed her. And it was not fair to Vanessa Lutz when I said that, you know what, number one for me should really be Trevor from Made in Britain. But I'm doing a different number one just to upset Brian because that's just – it's not true.
Okay.
Independent of Brian and his terrible taste and angrifying beliefs in certain movies, Vanessa Lutz deserves to be number one on my
– I can see that. I can see that.
My juvenile delinquents list here. Played by Reese Witherspoon in 1996 Freeway. It just makes me sad that Brian, who saw this movie when I assigned it to him just less than 6 months ago. Maybe 2 months ago. And he came back with a scathing review. And
it wasn't good.
He went on and on about how it's just not a good movie. And he nitpicking to the point where I recall just the other day I was stuck at a red light late at night, on the verge of being carjacked, actually. And I looked over and I saw some ruffians coming towards my car. And I swear to God, this is all true. I saw them coming towards my car. And then something sparked my memory about you complaining about Freeway and having the credits weren't complete, as you said. Like they had cop number one and cop number two.
Oh, yeah. That's how poorly written the movie was.
That's how most movies are. If you watch the credits, which you probably don't. If you watch credits, Brian, many of the credits at the end are not names because the names are never uttered. They just are whatever they are, plain. It's such a nitpicky thing.
No, you're missing the
watch Freeway, 1996 Freeway.
The characters in this film are never.
God,
named.
I would turn off his mic. God, I wish this thing was streaming right now on Fuckflix. It's not. But Freeway, 1996, Matthew Bright, who's no longer making movies because of people like Brian who think that his masterpiece Freeway is not good enough. Let alone Freeway 2, which
does
is not
call,
good
does
enough.
Does he call his masterpiece?
This is a movie about a young girl played by Reese Witherspoon, Vanessa Lutz, whose mom, played by Amanda Plummer, is shortly after the film begins, she is arrested in a prostitution sting, and she decides to ditch school and steals her social worker's car, and I'm talking about Vanessa Lutz now, and she's going to see Grandma. She just wants to get to Grandma's house. It's a modern day Little Red Riding Hood story.
Oh, it is. I couldn't tell that. It wasn't
Brian, shut
enough.
Up. It's not that big
a
deal.
It wasn't obvious.
They had fun with it. It's
Holy
a fun
fuck.
Movie. It's fun. It's good. A good time. God damn.
It's neither of those things.
Anyway, so did.
Can I tell you a funny interaction?
I don't want to go on and on. You know what's – here's a funny little aside. She runs into Kiefer Sutherland, who he's like a high school guidance teacher, but really he's a serial killer. And she opens up to him, and then he turns out to be kind of a violent guy. But before all that, she shows him, Kiefer Sutherland, a picture of her dad, who's actually a picture of Richard Speck. That's hilarious.
Richard Speck.
He's a serial killer. Yeah. That's her. They actually used a real picture of Richard Speck in her wallet as her dad. Funny shit. Who else is in this? Brooke Shields is in this. Brittany Murphy is also in it,
as well as
Kiefer Sutherland. Danny Elfman does all the music. It's a raw film. It's an independent movie, to say the least, because it's very cheaply made. However, it's got a lot of heart, and it's hilarious, and it's fun, and I wish there was more movies like this. You don't see enough movies like Freeway. And just to back up my sentiments here, Bri-Bri,
yep.
Little guy named – you ever heard of Robert Ebert? He gave Freeway
heard
3.5
– Roger
Ebert. Yeah. For 3.5 stars, Brian, he stated, like it or hate it, you have to admire its skill.
Okay. You know what? I've changed my opinion.
I don't think
it's quite good.
It's a very good movie, and you did not give it a fair chance. I don't know why.
Why would I give it a fair chance?
But you know what? It's whatever. You know what? That's great.
Why would I not give it a fair chance?
It really displays your hatred of independent cinema, it's this.
I have a lot of independent cinema on my list. I have Indiana Jones.
You ever seen Freeway there, Lugs?
No, I haven't.
And a first time ever on Film Vault's history, I'm assigning you a Freeway so you can get back to us and be the rubber match decider.
All right, I'll add it to my queue of 250 movies or so.
No, this got to bump this one up.
The one says move number one. Continue
your employment here. You should bump it up and come in with a review next week.
You want to hear a funny interaction I had with a listener after I trashed Freeway last time? I said one of the things that bothered me about Freeway was – I said, Reese Witherspoon has a Southern accent and a thick one for no reason.
I feel like you've talked about this on the show.
I did not talk about it because it happened and I forgot about it. I talked about the fact she has a Southern accent.
Yeah,
no
you talked about that, but I feel like you've talked about this.
Then someone tweeted me and was like, she has a Southern accent. She's from Arkansas, you ass, or whatever
right.
she's
you've
from.
Talked about this on the
okay.
show. Right.
And I didn't reply because it's not really worth it, but I'll say it now. Amanda Plummer, her mother had no accent. She's in L.A., why the accent? I understand that she herself is from the South. Why the character?
I'm trying to imagine a movie made by Brian, and it is the most boring, spot-on age-wise, as far as actors playing their parts. And every single – when you watch the credits, every single person that shows up on camera has a full first and last name. All the stuff that doesn't matter to movies, but it's all laid out for Bri-Bri. It's all laid out. Yes, he plays a person who's 15 years and 3 months old. And actually, you know what? His birthday is the same as the character he's playing.
Can I tell you something serious? I hope you listen and you think about this.
I don't know if I will.
Not naming your characters and just naming them cop or naming them priest.
It happens in many, many good movies, Brian.
I know, and I'm going to say
lots
this.
Lots of them.
That is a sign, I think, of bad writing. Lazy writing at
the
very least.
Oh, my God. How many characters? Have you ever written a script? There's plenty of people who and characters
they exist only to further the plot. If they
have to have a name,
they should have at least a first name.
It doesn't make any sense if they're never referred to in that name. You will never have any as a person watching the credits. You don't know who John Frank is because he was never referred to as John.
You can say Officer Frank.
He was never referred to as Officer Frank. He was a guy that shot a gun, and no one called him by name.
How do you know who cop number one is? How do you know who cop number two is?
The first cop that shows up.
Oh, shut up.
No, it's absolutely the way it is,
Brian. No, you need to name your character.
You're nitpicking.
No.
It's ridiculous.
I think it's indicative of
meanwhile, you can watch Steel transforming sexual acts by Michael Bay with a hard-on who can't remember how to talk about curved TVs and walks off.
No,
and no problem at all.
They name their characters Bumblebee, Starscream.
You know what? I'm going to... that would make me watch things that are made by Michael Bay, so that's not going to happen. I was going to suggest.
Bad Boys?
I bet you anything. I put it up to the listeners. Guys, somebody watch some credits of like maybe Bad Boys or some horrible like pain and gain.
I understand. It's done
watch
all the time.
Michael Bay, Brian's favorite director, Michael Bay, watch some credits and guaranteed
right,
there's
me,
going to be people without names in those credits.
Let me cut you some slack. I will say that they should at least be man on blah blah blah. They should at least be something other than
something
cop.
More descriptive.
Officer with crew cut. It should be something other than cop number one. I'm just telling you.
It's not even the director's fault. Yeah, sure. Like, perhaps he oversees it and like sees the credits and doesn't bitch about it.
That character but it's somebody exists else's only to job. The plot.
Somebody else's job to write the credits out. God, you'd
I'm
be the
worst.
I'm
not saying the writing of the credits. I mean the writing of the script.
It might the not cop, even be that, that cop number one in the script.
I
it might not
it
be.
Is. I promise it is.
Don't promise me.
Promise
shit
it is.
You don't know.
Also rants.
Let's do this.
Alex from Clockwork Orange.
I've not been this angry in a while.
You know what's the one that I thought of mid-show that I really wish I had put on the list now is the kids from Disconnect, the ones who peed in the Snapple Ball
too,
or whatever it was.
Too recent.
Too recent, but a really great scene and a good little slice of how bad they were. I hated those fucking kids. Cartman from South Park, Eddie Furlong in Terminator 2 and American History X, and all the kids from The Breakfast Club who I expect to come up on the listener top five.
JD from Heather's, Brian, Repo Man. Oh, Emilio Estevez and Repo Man. I'm surprised. It's very 80s heavy. I get that. Roxy from God Bless America. Speaking of too recent, but Tara.
Oh, yeah.
As you Roxy in God Bless America. And how can you not mention John Bender from Breakfast Club?
Club.
You got that? You had that on there?
No, I'm also Rans, but I'm expecting it to be on the list of top five.
And then also The Boys Next Door, which I'm looking for an excuse to talk more about that Penelope Spheres movie, which is streaming now. The Boys Next Door, one of the creepier, more stark movies you'll see. From the 80s, Charlie Sheen. But it just didn't work because they had just graduated high school. So I think they're like 18 when they go on their killing spree. Mm. But The Boys Next Door, I look forward to talking about that. Maybe like in the top five movies to that are streaming now, episode soon, perhaps. Boys Next Door.
Logan, listener top five.
All right, number five from the Bad News Bears, not to be confused with Bad News Bears, Kelly Leak.
Okay.
Who's that?
Number four, John Bender from The Breakfast Club.
Never heard of him.
Number three, was that Henry Evans from The Good Son.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you know what? He's so terrible in that movie, though. Such a bad, stiff little actor that I couldn't put him on because he was awful.
He's
Elijah Wood, good.
Elijah Wood, good. Good Wood.
Number two, John Connor from Terminator 2.
Yeah.
Connor.
The number one juvenile delinquent, as voted on by our listeners, is Alex from A Clockwork Orange.
Thank you, guys.
He's a senior citizen.
Hell to the yes.
All right, let's gamble and wrap this shit up.
He's actually, it's not Alex DeLarge. He's actually credited as juvenile delinquent.
As like boy number two?
Droog number one.
Droog number one.
That's actually his official title.
Okay, I like that.
Brian, come on. You and your little pet peeves, man. It's gone far enough, all right?
Name your fucking characters.
Stop it.
Hey, screenwriters out there, name your fucking characters.
It doesn't matter if they're not named. If they're never referred to, it doesn't matter.
Well, at least give them some character.
Whatever they
trait.
Are, the most on screen.
I'm saying
they're the first cop
I'm
on.
I'm saying if you name your character or give them some character trait in the name, then you've thought about it beyond, oh, this is a cop who needs to show up now because the hero needs to be. No.
Okay, here, let me ask you this. We'll get on with it. Okay. What would you prefer? Like cop with mustache?
At the very
cop
least.
Cop with scar?
I would take that. I would take that.
Here's the problem,
absolutely.
Brian. When the writer's writing it, it hasn't been cast yet. So they don't know who's going to be.
Hold on.
They don't know. They just know it has to be a cop.
No, no, no. And your character, Anderson.
Maybe.
Did you really write a script and not put like things in there like a cop walks up, he has a flat top and a scar or whatever the characteristic is?
You don't have to. If it doesn't matter to the story, it doesn't matter if he has a flat top or not. You're gonna pick,
such a fundamental,
you're going to cast whoever's the best actor.
This is such a fundamental difference between you and me is that I.
Oh, you'd be the worst. You would be the worst. Because you'd be like, and then there's a boy flying a kite in a park in the background, and he must be blonde-haired, blue-eyed, and 4'3". He must be 4 feet tall and 3 inches.
Now you're talking about casting. I'm talking about something that makes the character. If the cop has a flat top and a scar,
if the cop is going to fire one round,
maybe his backstory is he got mixed up in a shootout at some point. Maybe he keeps a flat top because his dad was a military man and wouldn't let him grow his hair long.
He's a cop.
My point is, think about your fucking character.
He's one of like eight cops that are just firing. You of all people,
see, now you're talking
who
about
love movies.
The plot.
You of all people who love like the movies with all the action going on, and there's like 15
when
cops
there's good characters.
Shooting. Brian, the movies you like don't have good characters.
I can't believe you don't see this the right way.
There are the main characters that do matter, that have lines and whatnot,
every
and there's a bunch
matters.
Of background extras who are just shooting,
I'm
firing guns.
I'm not talking
guns.
About extras, about credited actors.
Well,
in the credits.
But you become a credited actor if you actually have an action. If you're an extra with a gun and you fire that gun, you will have to have a credit.
I can't
maybe you don't
think
understand.
So little of like small characters.
Maybe you don't get it.
We did top five under five. No wonder you must not. Right. You must have hated that.
Right, let's get on.
All right, last
Logan's
week you guys gambled on Rio 2. At the time, the Rotten Tomato score was 61%.
Oh,
Anderson bid 41, and Brian 75.
I'm not talking about extras.
Now, currently,
you said
the Wednesday after release, the Rotten Tomato score for Rio 2 is 49%, giving
the
lead to Anderson.
Yes.
Is it really that bad?
Go enjoy Freeway again. No, Freeway 2! It's time!
I told you I can't get it. I can't get Freeway 2.
Okay, Made in Britain. Enjoy.
Made in Britain. Teleplay.
All right.
This week you're going to be gambling on Transcendence.
Wait, wait a minute. Wait, no, no, no.
No, we're not talking about this anymore.
You can shut it, son. All right, the 400 blows.
Are the characters named?
Yeah. Because you know what? I can't do a podcast here about film with someone who's not seen the 400 blows.
Right, I'll see it.
Put the on the front or else Logan's going to be very upset.
All right, this week is Transcendence.
I like how Logan's inserting himself.
I was going to say, Logan's selling his own.
We still got a lot to do, and we're running up against the clock.
You're like a line producer.
I was going to say.
Transcendence this week. All go.
Right. Anderson, I learned something about this from Matt Atchity. He let it slip. I'm going to tell you that he said...
Who's Matt Atchity?
Don't let me see your score. But at the time, he said it's rotten. So take that for what it's will. It could be 59. It could be zero.
Matt Atchity's the
editor-in-chief of Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, yeah, because you guys play a little game over there on the podcast that you stole from this show.
It was his idea.
Stole.
It was his idea.
Thieved.
I actually got him to do not new movies.
Anyways, long story short, for those of you long listeners of the Film Vault, Brian just shamelessly stole this bit.
It wasn't my idea.
But has it been stolen?
No, it was his idea. It's Rotten Tomatoes.
But why don't you say, hey, that idea is already running.
I did say to him, and that's why he said, oh, maybe I'll do older movies. I said, yes, do that. Anders, you disregard. Disregard. Okay, what do I think? Transcendence.
I appreciate you giving me the heads up there, buddy.
So you're writing down a number?
I'm writing down numerous.
Numerous numbers?
Yeah. Chris Letang took a lot of penalties tonight. Didn't look good. Gave up a shorthanded goal at one point. Fucking Letang in your sexy hair.
Okay, I have a number. What's your number?
58.
Ooh, 40. In honor of 400 blows, 40. I don't know what that's to do with that, man. 40%.
Stretch.
40%.
It's a reach.
All right, well, currently, the Wednesday before release with 22 reviews, the Rotten Tomatoes score for Transcendence is 18%.
Holy shit! Is it that bad?
Have you seen Transcendent Man?
No, I know what that is.
I flick fast.
Oh, you talked
about it. It's a documentary about the guy. I can't remember his name offhand, but he's a futurist, pretty much talking about the future of medicine and stuff. Okay. Very interesting. And essentially, I feel like somebody watched that documentary and then sat down and said, "I'm going to write a screenplay about said future." And it seems I don't know what Johnny Depp's doing. Right. What are you doing, Johnny? What are you doing?
Where have you gone, Johnny Depp? Why? By the way, the trailer. Have you seen him talking like he's a scientist? He's a scientist to the level that he's lecturing. Like he's a respected scientist, and he's doing the Johnny Depp voice. Like in the future, we can eradicate all of our diseases.
But really, really smart. You know, professors can be a bit aloof.
Sure. The stringy hair,
eccentric.
The goatees. Yeah. Come back to us, Johnny Depp. Thank you, the urethras. Future artists this week, and you can check more about them at andersonandbrian.com. That is where you go to click through on the Amazon banner and buy all the shit you're normally going to buy. Costs you nothing, gets us a few pennies on the back end, and we appreciate the support.
Want to do the top five? I do 5-1 real quick.
Sure.
My five, the 400 blows. I did a whole bunch of Harmony Korine and Larry Clark shit, but I ended up with Bully, 2001's Bully, Bobby Kent. Mick O'Brien from Bad Boys, 1983's Bad Boys. Tim Roth as Trevor in Made in Britain. And number one, Vanessa Lutz in Freeway. Reese Witherspoon in Freeway.
Young Indiana Jones at number five for me from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Hit Girl from Kick-Ass. Giuseppe and Pasquale from Sunshine. Teddy Duchamp from Stand By Me. And Tanner Boyle from Bad News Bears. Is it short music, Logan, or do we run out of
bed? It's still playing.
Run out of bed?
What's wrong with you? Can you hear it?
Run out of bed?
The urethra is still playing.
It's just part of the song.
Okay, there we go.
Is it the urethra?
The urethras. They're our feature artist.
Numerous.
And thank you to Michael Cottingham for his artwork this week. Thank you very much for sending that in. We appreciate all the artwork, guys. It becomes our art for the that week's episode. Check us out at Twitter, Facebook, The Film Vault. My book is out April 29th. I haven't talked that much about it. But actually, what I do want to talk about is that day, I will have a book signing event in New York on the Upper West Side. I would like to see all of the vaulters. Can we call them vaulters? Can we call our fans
vaulters?
No,
we're not going to call them.
Our listeners? All the vaulters up there in New York. I do have one in New York and one in Ridgewood, New Jersey, two days later. I would like to see people there if you're a fan of the Film Vault and you want to see see what it looked like and see me stumble over some words. Be there. Stumble over some words.
You think that like halfway through production of Transcendence? Halfway through Transcendence, you'd think that they'd be like, you know what? We should just turn this into Lawnmower Man, like a remake, and be done
should.
With it. Right? That would have been smarter.
What if they did?
Maybe.
Lawnmower Man was a bad movie. It was a good book. Why don't you turn it into a movie? Oh, by the way, you'll also be excited to know I'm doing a Santa Monica book signing, which you'll be at.
No, I will not be.
You have to be one of my signings.
No, it was a draw.
So you're going to be at my, and I got to engineer the
I know you're trying to get people to come down to your little signing, and me being there might help you out, but I'm not showing up, buddy. I'm sorry. Unless you ask me as a favor.
You realize that someday you're going to have a little movie out, maybe on YouTube or somewhere, and you're going to want people to see it, and I'm going to be like, this is a really good movie. You're going to want to check it out.
You will have nothing to do with
my support.
Nothing to do with my production.
My point is, I'll
just the same as you've had nothing to do with it leading up to this point.
My point is, I'm supportive. Well, Anderson, I didn't ask you to help.
Anything
I didn't help you to help me with the book. I asked you to help me with the promotion.
I told you. God, you know what? We're at each other's throats more than normal this week. I told you numerous times, if you were a bra, I'd return you for lack of support. You're not a supportive person.
Why am I not supportive? Give me an example how I'm not supportive.
We're going to do a better episode where we're like much more in harmony next week,
I promise you. Your drinking is out of control.
It could be.
It's getting out of control.
Whenever he drinks, it's just like you don't want to be around him.
It gets worse and worse. I haven't said anything.
We do it for Bango! Brian.
When's the last time you bought a car?
Oh,
You've had your car for quite some time.
Too long, yes. And one of the reasons is I just hate buying cars.
I bought a car a year and a half ago. And while I'm happy with the car I got, the process can be troublesome. That's exactly what you're afraid of, is that you're going to overpay. You're not going to know what the car's really worth, what other people are paying. You know what I mean? Like, I know the sticker price, I know the price that I want to pay. What do people get off the lot with paying?
And this is one of the reasons why I wanted to run this sponsor on this program here, is because it actually helps out the listener.
You're talking about True Car.
True Car.
TrueCar.com. They are sponsoring this week. And yes, they take most out of buying a new car, or a used car for that matter.
Yeah, so Brian, it turns out that the average savings on a car is $3,046 off MSRP. And actually, I did a little research. I went online because I was been looking for cars. The car that I was looking at $2,000 less, literally, on TrueCar.com. And
nice.
I heard the spiel. I figured out how they do it. It's all about overhead and cost value, and they figured out a formula where they can save you, the consumer, money.
Well, here's a formula to save yourself some money. First, go to TrueCar.com, find out what others paid for the same vehicle in your market and around the country. Second, register at TrueCar.com. You see the upfront pricing information and lock in your savings certificate. Third, simple, print out your certificate, take it to the TrueCar certified dealer for a better, hassle-free buying experience. That's it, TrueCar.com. Check them out, get yourself a new car.